What's happening? Hope y'all are enjoying your Tuesday. This is Randolph Terrence.
It's Monday, and this is Andy Klein.
I keep saying Tuesday. I don't know why I keep doing that. Listen, we are three guys on. If you notice, you didn't hear our third voice. But we have two voices sitting in with us today, so we're actually four guys on today. Four guys, no ladies, like last week. Sitting in with us today, we have Mr.
Danny Ruye.
And also Mr.
Rick Younger.
And we are four guys.
You gotta let the ladies know.
You gotta let the ladies know.
You got to let the ladies know.
You gotta let the ladies
know. How is this movie? Did anybody see this movie?
Of course.
Not yet. The James Brown movie?
Oh, good? Get on up.
Brown one.
The James Brown movie.
No. You know why? Because whenever I hear the song, I automatically think of Django.
Django was good.
Yes, I saw
but
Django.
I mean, this one, is it like the musician
I heard
one?
It was good.
Is it the same as like the Ray Charles movie? The same as
good.
Like
I heard it wasn't
Johnny
as
Cash.
Good as the Ray Charles or nor the Johnny Cash.
Maybe I'll go see that tomorrow. I was just thinking.
Yeah, I heard that some black folks are upset because
white directors.
But you know, it's like there are black folks that can find it's something anything. To be mad about with anything.
Anything.
Go see the movie. Be entertained.
Did you see it?
No, I haven't.
There you go.
But I will.
I saw.
But it's not because of the white man. It's just because
I
need money to go to the movie.
I did too. That's the only movie I've seen in the last 8 months.
I saw that. It was a choice. I was standing in the movie theater looking at the two posters like... Guardians of the Galaxy.
I read the comic of one.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go to that one.
I'm going to see the movie about a jillion times. So that's how I felt about 42. I never saw 42 in the movie theater, but I've seen 42 about 78 times.
Same actor, though. Same guy.
Yeah,
right.
Because I think roles. They're trying to see if he can play every black person ever.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah. They're going to do a Black Panther movie. Watch. He's going to be Black
Panther.
He's
going to be
Panther. Watch.
He's going to be
watch.
The Panther.
And when they do the new Falcon, all of a sudden Terrence Mackey ain't going to be in Captain America.
Chadwick Boseman as every black guy every who's black worthy man. Of a biopic.
Chadwick Boseman and Andre 3000 was busy.
I'm just saying, you know, I'm an actor.
Right.
I would like to play some parts.
Well, you're not.
I don't want to tell what parts I want to play because they might give it to Chadwick
they
Boseman.
They will give it to Chadwick Boseman.
And believe me, I love Chadwick. I'm just saying.
But you got a little
let's
hate.
Let's spread the wealth.
You got a little hate.
I don't have any hate. I love
man,
him.
You know they just, only let three through at a time.
Well, you know, that's why we got to build our own shit. People always say, well, then make your own. Like, you know, like it's just
to?
That, you know, hey, man, how come you ain't in the movies? I've seen you in a lot of commercials. Why like, yeah, because, I turned down like 50 movies.
Yeah.
If you do stand-up, you should go on The Tonight Show.
Right, yeah. Oh, I remember one time.
Have you tried that?
I was going to Vegas one time, and I made the mistake sitting next to a lady. She's like, so, why are you going to
I
Vegas?
Like that you made the mistake, by the way, sitting down on the plane next to somebody.
Well, that was wasn't the mistake. The mistake was this. The lady's like, why are you going to Vegas? I was going to Vegas for a comedy festival. And she said, oh, you're a comedian? You should call Wayne Brady. He seems like a nice guy. He'll help you out.
1-800-4-WAYNE.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. Do you have Wayne's number? No, let me put these headphones
on. You know, Wayne tried to help me once, and I said, man, I got to do this on my own.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I won't appreciate it.
I don't need nothing.
He could have burst their bubble. He could have been like, Wayne Brady is an asshole. Trust me. He never takes my calls. You think he's nice?
I talked to Wayne Brady. That dude is an asshole. And I think he's gay a little bit.
Just a little bit.
A little bit.
He only takes a tip. He's like, I just take this tip in my ass.
I'm just a little gay. And he tried to sell me drugs and stuff. He's not a nice guy.
So did we fully introduce Rick and Danny, both comedians?
No, Rick and Danny, as you can tell, are both comedians. Danny Ruye, the white man.
The other one.
As played by Chadwick Boseman.
As played by Chadwick Boseman. Exactly. Is actually, can you say your radio handle?
Yeah.
Are you free to do that?
Yeah, I can say that.
Okay, well, give it to him.
I host the Grant and Danny show on 106.7 The Fan every day, 10 to 2.
Yeah, out of D.C. So look that up. It's 106.7 The Fan out of D.C.
106.7TheFanDC.com.
10
right?
to 2.
Yeah, that's us.
Want to listen online? Yeah.
Radio.com, Apple.
Are they
all that
paying
stuff.
You 10 to 2 money now?
I have a grown adult salary for the first time in my life.
Because the last time we talked, you were doing 10 to 2, but they weren't paying you 10 to 2 money.
That's summer after sophomore year shit. You know what I mean? It was like now it's I have a grown up salary. Money.
Yeah. And tell them how you got in, because you kind of backdoored your way into DJ.
It's crazy, man. I mean,
don't you have a degree in something? It,
political science. It has nothing to do with anything else. I wanted to be a lawyer, and I'm almost there. I always wanted to be on the radio, but I was a college baseball player and played a little bit afterwards, and I always thought that's what I wanted to do. And guys that were on the air.
So you always try to downplay that, by the way. that you played professional baseball?
Not really. I mean, I got a cup of coffee for a minute, and they
sent me home. It doesn't matter. That's more of a cup of coffee than what? 90,
I wanted a cup of coffee. I never got that.
99% of the population.
Yeah, I mean, it's an embarrassing part of my life where they sent me home and I threw a temper tantrum and threw my shirt on the ground. And it's something I don't like to talk
about.
Did you
burn your own jersey?
I
thought about it.
Yourself like you were LeBron.
I made my own decision on the field in Tarpon Springs, Florida.
Tell me about that story. What was that story like?
Well, so
let's relive it.
Well, I'm down. You're a dick. I'm down in Vero Beach, basically for somebody did a favor for somebody. So they said, okay, come on down and practice, and we may assign you to a team, right? So I'm there for basically 5-6 days. Baseball practice, if you've ever done it at any level, sucks. And it sucks even more in 1,000-degree humid heat down in Florida.
Yeah, Vero Beach,
and you're doing these organizational type things. This is how we field bunts. And it's like, okay, shoot me with a high caliber weapon. Don't tell me where it's coming from. And after one of these long sessions where I'm running back and forth and sweating like a prison snitch, at the end of the day, the scout comes out, that was did me the favor. I was hey, we're going to release you. Hmm. All the draft picks that we thought weren't going to sign, they signed, and you get a giant bowl of nothing. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that happened. I figured the end was coming at a certain point. And he goes, don't worry, I put in a couple calls. The Phillies, Orioles, a couple teams. By the time you get back home, you'll be able to go maybe be an organizational guy, which basically means you can be a minor leaguer for a couple years and maybe coach or scout for somebody.
Right.
I said, okay, that's nice. I appreciate it. And as I'm walking off, he's like, one last thing. We need all your equipment. Oh, yeah, of course, because you can't walk in another clubhouse with a different organization's equipment. Yeah. So there's no problem. And I tally all the crap and take what's mine and what's theirs, and I leave it. And he goes, I need your shirt. You need my shirt.
Back.
You need this sweaty blue shirt that says Dodgers that's 90% my DNA now?
T-shirt?
No, they're like, here's your complimentary shirt for being one of just a body. And I go, are you fucking kidding me? I mean, I shouldn't have said that. That was a mistake. If I'm looking back on the graph of when mistakes were made,
but you were holding on to the possibility. I don't want to piss nobody off.
And something about that. It was a $9. It wasn't even a good shirt. It was a bad shirt. I go, are you fucking kidding me? And he's like, yeah, we need it back. And for some reason, that sent me into a rage. And I slammed the shirt on the ground. Here's your fucking shirt. Again, a mistake. And I drove back the 17 hours from Vero Beach, Florida, in 95 traffic. And surprisingly, no phone calls.
Phone calls? Yeah, if you had just given them the shirt back nicely,
that's the story
you'd
they tell.
A scout right now.
That's the cautionary tale. There was this one guy, we really liked him, and we were going to find a place for him, but we asked for his shirt.
The not that athletic 5'11, 190 pound white guy. They don't make many of those.
Jim Traber.
Yeah. Don't bring up Jim Traber in front of me. Joe Orsolak. I got an offer to play independent ball out in the middle of Montana, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to start my life. I'm going to try to be a grown-up, and I still might one day.
You didn't want to go and just kind of kick around? You could have just spent a season doing it just for chits and giggles.
I thought
you were so mad.
Yeah, I was just so mad.
Do you remember the name of that league? Was it
the Skeeters?
They don't have weird names, right?
Well, I wasn't even in a league. I was in extended spring training down at their...
The one in Montana, the one out...
Oh, I don't know.
It was some one of those just
based
out
off,
of the way.
Yeah, it's one of those old industrial league type things where guys are going to work at the mill during the day and play ball at night for the local township.
Well, being the kind of guy that doesn't like working a job, I would have gone. Yes, I have not had a job since 1994, and I wasn't good at that one. I was just hanging around.
Struggling.
I was working for the Department of Social Services in Baltimore in a neighborhood where I went to elementary school. So it was kind of like one of those cautionary tales of, hey, Glenn, you should have paid attention in school because he's coming to me for benefits. Yeah. The kind of situation where if it were me, I would have acted like I wasn't who I was going to my classmate for hey, Charles. No, this isn't Charles. I would have acted like it wasn't me. But I was working at Department of Social Services, and I was doing stand-up. And I was like, just whenever I wanted to go on the road, I just, all right, I'm not coming in this weekend. And then I finally just quit.
Fuck them kids.
Get your own damn benefits.
Fuck them kids.
I can't get a job now.
We talked about that.
Yeah, 20-year job.
You ain't got no resume?
You got to trump up those years. You got to trump them up with bullshit on your resume. Like, I learned a lot of skills and
I was like, yes, black man, you were in jail. Freelance. Admit it.
Freelance, I marketed myself.
What did you do to get onto the radio?
So
did you kick around after the baseball?
No. I shut down and started working. I went back and actually worked at my old high school in the alumni office and coaching and that kind of stuff.
So you were
coaching? Yeah, so I coached.
Because I was about to say, if you had went into an office work,
I wasn't ready for that.
You'd have shot to shoot yourself in the head.
Yeah, so I eventually did that, though. I was a contractor with the DOD for 5-6 years.
I wouldn't have been able to go from that to that. Yeah, I wouldn't have been.
It was an absurd time. But basically, long and short was, I always wanted to be on the radio, but it was too big of an obstacle. It was like too high to climb that mountain. Right. Those guys, like, especially in the D.C. area, guys like Opie and Anthony, Don and Mike, Howard Stern, Ron and Fez, you know, just radio gods were here in this town.
You ain't even talked about the black ones. Donnie Simpson.
Yeah. Donnie Simpson. Yeah, you're right.
Who else was in? Because you grew up here. Was like Donnie.
I mean, Russ Parr.
Russ Parr. I don't really like his show. I'm being
Randy
honest.
Dennis in Baltimore. And yeah. What's the other guy? Watts. I can't remember Watts' first name. But yeah, it's a lot of people.
It's a lot of
stations in the Baltimore, Washington area.
Yeah.
It's a hotbed. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know who I think of? I used to always think about you is Chris Paul. You were like the white equivalent of Chris Paul.
Except I wasn't endorsed by the team. In fact, I was on the opposite for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the quick story, I mean, it's not even that good, is that I just was up there. I was up there in New York. I was temping. I was like painting, like moving. I was doing just bull crap, you know? And just on a whim, I was like, I'm miserable as a Redskins fan every freaking year. They're 6-9, and if they win one game and seven teams tie and one guy collapses of a stroke, maybe they can back into the playoffs. I'm doing the same dance. So I made this dumb video and put it on YouTube and got 100,000 hits. And I went, holy shit, I think I'm onto something here. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So the following season, I did one a week, and the big ones would get, you know, over 100,000. The low ones would be in the 30s, but it was the perfect time. It was the rise of the Redskins blog on Washington Post. It was the DC Sports blog. It was a million other things, and everybody had a Redskins blog all of a sudden.
They needed content.
Yeah, and they would put my crap up. These stupid little videos, homemade, my wife holding the camera. It was Amish almost, you know? And it got to the point where a big one I did right around Thanksgiving on all the different platforms got about 200,000 views. And the Sports Junkies, my favorite radio show, the producer got in touch with me and said, yeah, come in the day after Thanksgiving at like 9:45. Yeah, the show ends at 10.
The lightest day.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, I'll be there.
That's that July 4th headline week. Yeah. You can headline July 4th, one show.
The New Year's Day. Do I buzz you in? Do I call you? I'll be there. Like, you know, got there. I was all excited. And the spot actually went pretty well. It was a good spot. And it happened to be that day that the program director was looking for a part-time, nighttime fill-in co-host.
That day.
Literally that day. I'm not kidding you. They had a meeting with the guy that was hosting nights at that point.
I'm imagining how Chadwick Boseman would play this scene. This is the stuff of biopic.
How he's going
to continue.
You go, okay, yeah, good, good. So that's my Chadwick Boseman, by the way. I have good impressions.
And then
good.
The call to the wife after you leave. I know, right? Guess what happened on Black Friday?
So I go, that's right, it was Black Friday. The coincidences are unbelievable. So long and short, I started doing like once or twice a week. I'd find it on Thursday. Hey, you want to come in Monday and do 4 hours of radio in D.C.? Still living in New York. Taking the bus back and forth, 2-3, sometimes 4 days a week, going back and forth because it's, you know, if you say no one time,
right.
They don't ask
they
anymore.
They don't need you.
If you throw your jersey down.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure. You learned.
I learned.
I was just throwing a jersey down one time.
One time I wanted to say fuck this, but I did not because I learned. So I was doing that, and then my role gradually increased, and they gave me the night show a few years ago, and then just, you know, luck of the draw, I got promoted to middays, and I've been doing that for the last 3-4 years.
So the first day when you were by yourself, like, were you freaking out? Like,
no.
Because normally it's like you and another guy, right?
Right,
right.
A talker, though.
Yeah, so I've been, exactly. I mean, I love the sound of my own voice. It's my favorite thing in the world.
I'm a talker. I know that because I'm a talker, too.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't bother me in the least.
Oh, it's the dream. It's like you literally get to set the pace, the tone. And when you're doing a show with somebody, and ultimately, if I had to choose, I actually like that better because it's a better show, I think. But when you are by yourself and you're doing it, it's they're calling you. You know what I'm saying? And like, the ego boost for that is unbelievable. You go, here's my position on fill in the blank. Who gives a shit what it is?
Yeah.
And Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah. Chadwick Boseman, the greatest actor of our time. The phone rings or it doesn't. It's based on what you do. It's the same sense we get doing stand-up.
Right.
Is that things that people who don't do stand-up comedy will never experience, knowing that if something doesn't work, it's hell. It's death. It feels like the worst thing in the world. But when it does work, it's as good as any drug.
Are you at the point of stand-up like we've all been there, like where if it doesn't work, well, now we're all like, eh.
So what?
So what?
Your fault.
The next one's going to be good. Well, that's like, what I always think the next one will be.
I get up on stage for therapy, man. I'm just talking to get stuff off my chest. I hope you laugh. But like sometimes I'm not trying to be
that
funny.
Point
but
with the radio?
But you know me. You know how competitive I am and how immature I am.
Yeah.
The only way I know how to approach stuff that I care about is to over-prepare and take it so seriously and I pit out. You know what I mean? Yeah, like that's
those people win. Maybe. You see, we ain't got no radio show. Well, I mean, it ain't because we don't want one.
Well, it's all I know how to do it. So, like, I've never been more talented than most people I went up against, especially in sports. So the only thing, what can I control is my effort, my preparation, and that kind of shit. I know it sounds corny, but
no, because I take that,
you know, but I take it seriously.
Some stuff is true. You know, it's like people are like, that's corny. It's not true. Corny. And you know, also have a potential to be a motivational speaker. So keep all these gems. Tell the story about the shirt. All I'm in control of. Get your nice Tony Robbins voice.
I'm going to taste
all you're in control of.
I'm going to taste it.
Yes.
That shirt changed my life.
Yeah, I know that from boxing or from martial arts, from fighting. I just have to be better than my opponent. And I can't control. You can't control the ring. You can't control the ref. You can't control the crowd. But you can control what kind of shape you're in.
That's what I learned from running from people who I knew could beat me in a fight. I'm faster.
So I did that part. I don't act like I didn't do that part. I did that part a lot until about 18 when I started taking martial arts. And even then, for the first few years, I still did the run part until I was like, you know, I can do something about this.
I'm only a yellow belt. Exactly. I should go.
Exactly.
I always tell people, if you hear heard about me being in a fight, you better check my back for injuries, because I'm running first. And I'm like, once you back me into a corner, you're in big trouble, because I'm fighting fighting to save my life. And you don't want to fight a scared man.
Nah. Right.
I mean, I remember one time doing these crappy, you know, one night gigs. It probably was a Ricky Shackleford gig in Baltimore.
The real deal.
And some dude got upset about something I said. I said, dude, for real? I'm like, I don't like to fight. And if you come up here, I'm going to take this mic stand and I'm going to beat you until you stop moving.
That's a big one. I'm like that too. Like
I do not like to fight. If fighting consisted of me just hitting you, great, I'd be into that. But I don't like getting hit. You know,
and that part sucks. Yeah. I'll agree with that.
Yeah, like, whoa, dude, bad. Why do you dislike me so much? Why are you hitting me?
Like legitimately hit?
I don't want to. Oh, it
shocking.
Hurts.
It hurts and it's shocking.
Yeah, it's like, why are you so filled with anger? Why are you so hateful? Stop it.
That's what hurts so much is because you have that thought, and it's a shocking pow. You're like, this guy just hit me.
Do that like.
Yeah.
And then, believe me, though, I have not been hit. I've not been hit in a very long time. So if it were to happen now. Yeah. It would really be a shock.
When Seth Yahalem broke my nose for the first time in fourth grade, I just did that thing you're talking about. That. The like,
yeah,
like just kept like gently touching my. You know what I'm talking about? Like that upward palm,
hurt.
Like
it hurts
in disbelief, and then it's like the. Like the swelling around your eyes?
Yes.
That's bullshit.
Yes.
And then sucks. Your eyes start watering. You're like, am I going to cry?
Oh, you're going to cry.
I cried blood, Andy.
You're going to cry.
He was like, oh, true blood.
Yeah,
I'm a vampire. Tears are blood.
You're going to cry. Rick, give us your background. You started doing comedy. Rick is from Baltimore. Rick, I actually met... And when I first, well, here's the thing. Andy knew Rick before I did.
From way
Andy
back,
knew
yeah.
Way
yeah, Andy
back.
Go back to when Andy had this killer bit about taking a dump.
That sounds
at the whole, comedy cafe. It was
he's still doing that bit.
It was a whole chunk, man.
Hack. He's still doing that.
Hack. No, me and Andy go way back. It's because when I first moved to New York and I had to move back to Baltimore for a little while, I had a club, Winchester's, where I could produce my own shows, and I would always have Andy on the shows if he was available.
Yeah.
I've always thought Andy was just hilarious, so I've always
Winchester's was because that place was around for years, and it was like the basement first,
and then it was the
and
attic.
It was upstairs for a little while. I was in the middle level.
They used every level,
and it was just right.
And then they went up to the attic, and you just felt like the floor is gonna just fall. I'm gonna walk, and I'm gonna be on the middle floor again in a second, because it had to be condemned at some point, but they kept it going for a while. That was the first place a lot of people featured, because it was like the smallest club. And then the first place a lot of people headlined. But it was like a classic hole in the wall, like attic kind of, and everything's dusty for some reason.
Of course.
And then when Dave Attell did Insomniac, he came to Baltimore, and that's where he did, because he always did a clip at a comedy club.
Yeah.
They didn't really have a club. They had the Comedy Factory, and they had Winchester's, but he was in town on like a weeknight.
Yeah.
So he shows up at Winchester. So on Insomniac, all those episodes are like, here he's at the Improv, and then he's going to that town. And then at Baltimore, he's at this
Winchester's.
Attic. He's in
an attic.
Did they not let him do the factory because he wouldn't hand out drink tickets?
Or did
they say?
Not enough.
Okay.
They cut his time.
They cut his time down. But,
sorry, David.
Yeah. So what do you want to know about me? What do you want to know
about me? You moved up to New York.
Yeah, I'm originally from Baltimore, but I started doing stand-up in D.C. because I was in college at University of Maryland. Okay. And I started doing stand-up while I was still in college. So I started like the Greenbelt Comedy Connection, Comedy Cafe, that whole D.C. scene.
There used to be two Comedy Connections.
Yeah.
Langley Park.
Yeah. They were connected?
They were the same.
And it was the Laurel, too.
Yeah, and then they moved to Laurel, yeah.
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 But, yeah, so I was, you know, that's where I started. But, so, you know, that was 92. And I was doing the whole thing. And, you know, 92 black guy, you were kind of relegated to the Def Comedy Jam circuit because everyone assumed because you were black that you were a Def Comedy act.
And which by the way, whenever you hear black comics saying that, I'm going to speak for you for a second because I know exactly what you're saying, but I don't think people understand. Whenever we say you're relegated to, we're not shitting on that that brand of comedy. We're not shitting on it. People think that, oh, you don't like it either. No, I like it.
Well, I'm not shitting on it because that I had to play there because when you went to a mainstream club, they would give you the hardest time getting on stage.
They give you the nigga, or they give you nigga night.
Right. They would say stuff, I have enough Def Jam
Danny,
act.
Stop saying
I'm like,
that.
No. I'm like, I'm not a Def Jam act. So it's like you would have to jump through hoops to get on at the mainstream club, which I still did what I had to do to get on at the mainstream clubs. But I knew if I wanted stage time, I had to go to the Def Jam rooms.
You gotta go get up.
And the thing that's so funny about it is that I've been doing stand-up for 22 years. For like the first 20, I didn't even curse in my act. So I was this non-cursing comedian in the Def Jam room. So I was like, I got to fool them into thinking I'm not cursing. So I was very energetic and, you know, I acted out things and everything. And half the time, people were like, hey, you didn't hardly curse at all. I was like, no, I didn't curse at all.
At all.
Yeah. Didn't notice. Yeah. But yeah, so I played those rooms, so I did all the stuff, the creative tour where you go down south and play all the Def Comedy Nights when the Comedy Zone is not doing its regular show.
That's all it is.
You know, so it
urban flavors.
It toughens you up. It's because there's nothing you're going to face in a mainstream room that's as rough as going down to Atlanta to play Bruce's Club 559, where it's like he comes up, okay, look, y'all, before we do the professional show, we're going to have that amateur night. And if you don't like these brothers, you know what to do. And everybody in unison starts going, nigga, boo. Yeah. You know, so you're like, oh, my goodness.
Because that's a good thing to tell
right,
me.
Right, great intro.
And so like you think, oh, since I'm on the professional portion of the show, he's going to do a little material in between and then bring me up. And so this is how he brings me up. He's like, all right, y'all, look, enough of that nigga bullshit.
Yeah.
This is the real show. Come to the stage, Rick Younger. So like, I'm like, oh, man. And I'm like trying to do jokes as fast as I possibly can. And it's like, I just felt like the nigga boo was coming. Like in the middle of a joke, I just like, my name is Rick Younger. Good night.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I was on with Dion Cole, and Dion comes on next. At this point, they haven't booed anybody in about 15 minutes.
Oh, they want to.
They're really restless. Yeah. So Dion now has to get into some snapping. So he's doing all the best snaps. You know, like, your shirt's so tight, you're going to catch a yeast infection around your nipples. Your pants so tight, you're about to catch a yeast infection around your balls. You're doing all his best yeast infection.
A lot of yeast infection stuff.
Material. Well, yeast infection stuff is effective.
It's effective. And so, but he just eventually reached a point where he was tired of it. And, you know, Dion's a cool dude. He's like, look, man, I did not come down here to degrade another black brother. I have material. I would like to do it.
Nigga boo!
No, the boo didn't come. What happens next? You never guess what happens
what
next.
What happens next?
But what happens next is a comedian. Her name was Small Fry. And she now does the gospel circuit
she's
as Small
on the
Fire.
Gospel. Yeah. Small, and, oh God.
Yeah, so she's changed from Small Fry to Small Fire. So Small Fry comes up to the front of the front row. It's like, yo, D, cut that shit out. There's some niggas in the back talking about shooting you. And so he's like, my name's Dion Cole. Good night. Hmm. He comes off stage, comes over to me. When he was on stage, he had on like a jersey and a skull cap. He comes over to me. The skull cap is off. His coat is zipped up like he's in disguise. He's like, all right, Rick, look, this is what we're going to do. You go get the car, have it running by the front door, and I'm going to go get our money. We had to make a getaway with our own money. So those are the types of places I'm playing. Nice Christian raised boy.
Right.
And like that was just the first time I went. The next time I go down there with Willie Brown and Woody, ventriloquist act, and these people are fascinated by the ventriloquist act because it's like they can't believe he's making a dummy talk. So I survive once again. And
no booze.
Because I quit. I will quit if I feel a boo is coming. I went by technicality. So
Technical knockout.
Willie is on stage and a fight breaks out at the club.
Yeah.
So Willie then uses Woody to mediate the fight. Y'all know that ain't right. Y'all need to stop that fighting in here. They push the guys there. They put the guys out who were fighting. And he continues on. It's like he's powering through because he's killing. You know, that feeling where you're in this room that's so tough and nobody can handle it. And you and your dummy are
killing
just,
with a dummy.
You know, like dummy. You dummies don't know what. And so he's
who's
doing
the real
thing.
Dummy here?
Right. And then these guys rush the door to get back in. At this point, I'm like, Willie, get off the stage, man. It's like, you know, nobody has come back into the club because they're like, look, we know how to behave now. We won't start any stuff, you know. So I'm like, let's go get our money and get out of here. So we go to the back.
It's all about the getting of the money.
Right. Yeah. And then you notice there's a common theme, get the money. So we go back to get the money. We go into this back room, and there's this guy sitting behind a desk. The desk is covered with cash and guns, and it's two big dudes at the door. Once again, I'm like, man, I just want to make people laugh.
Yeah, right.
That's all I want to do. And if I don't do it, believe me, nobody's more upset about it than me.
A girl in the corner dancing for no reason.
And all it takes is for somebody to be pissed off at the guy behind the desk and bust through, and I'm dead.
Yeah.
And that was the thing where I'm like, I'm no longer performing in places where I would not be in if I weren't there for comedy.
That'd be hilarious if the dummy got shot. Like
someone walked through. No, Mendoza!
Chadwick Boseman is Woody. And he dies.
Chadwick Boseman could do it. But yeah, so that's kind of I digressed. But I mean, that's where I was. That's what I was doing before I was finally like, look, I'm never going to be the biggest guy in this Def Jam circuit. It's just not my style. I can survive. Mm-hmm. And there's always somebody who's like, hey, man, you're kind of clever. You're kind of unique for this environment. But even they knew I shouldn't be there.
You shouldn't be there. Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to New York and I'm going to start. My goal is to go towards the mainstream television and film. And
well, I mean, the television's working. Like I was with my, when I texted you, do you record that live? Rick is on Guys Tell All. Yeah, on
the Today Show, the fourth hour with Kathleen and Hoda. Our segment's called Guys Tell All.
Do y'all do that live?
That's live.
Okay,
that's
so live TV. I'm with my wife at the gym, and we're looking down at the thing, and I'm fucking with her. Which, by the way, don't ever try to work out with your wife. I get paid to do this, and she's fighting me every step of the way.
Because she can.
I'm like,
to be safe, I just won't work out.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's a good
He's
angle.
He's like, I got a thing going, being 5'11 and 190. Yeah. I don't want to mess that up.
I've reached my goal.
I would love to be 190 again. Look like I ate my 190 self.
So we're standing there, and I'm like, come on now, put some incline on. I don't think I need to. You don't think. People pay me to do this for them. I've studied on. Okay, fine. Are you going to tell me how to write a joke next? Is that the next thing you're going to do? You're going to tell me what a callback is?
She's going to sign callback. Up.
Really? So we look up, and who do I see singing on television?
Was it me?
It was, yeah.
It was Rick Younger.
Singing Let's Get It On. I said, oh, there go Rick right there. She goes, that's Rick. I said, yeah, they go Rick right there singing on television. I texted him. I said, why do I see you singing?
I'm
Let's Get
telling
It
you,
On.
Hoda should have never dead. You know, it's like, you know, you do this show. It's live. We're hanging out,
dancing
and in between
them,
the stuff
away,
that
folks.
Happens between the actual airing of television, and like, so we wound up singing, and they. So, like, for the first time, they really hear me singing. They're like, you should bring us back from break by singing. And then Hoda says to me.
Should I?
Yeah. Hoda says to me, I dare you to get up and, like, work the camera. I'm like,
she,
really?
She worked
you're going to
like
dare
a,
me?
She worked you like a bitch.
I mean, really? Do you mind being worked by Hoda? Have you seen this movie?
I've seen
she's
Hoda.
A beautiful
she's,
lady.
She's Hoda's got a cute thing.
Right in the vagina. That's what I do.
And that guy lost his job. I was like, dude, it goes
Kathy
without
Lee
saying.
Is old as shit looking now.
Do they give you direction for that kind of stuff? Or they want you guys to be natural?
No, it's like, I mean, you know what not to do. It's live television. I mean, we've gotten enough complaints about stuff when we do stuff out
How
of
did
the
you
way.
Fall into that?
You know what? This is one of
or
those.
Chuck recommend? I can never get a hookup on something
this
like
This is one
that.
Of those perfect examples of, as a comedian, you get most of your work from other comedians.
Yeah.
The whole thing goes back. A few years before they even started doing Guys Tell All, they had a one-time man panel moderated by Donnie Deutsch. It was
a mantle, if you will.
A mantle, there you go. If
it
you
was
will.
Me, Donnie Deutsch is the,
like
as the
dude,
host.
By the way, but that'll come back later.
Me, Alan Houston, Bill Ranchick.
The basketball player?
Former,
yeah.
The former Nick basketball
right,
player?
Right, former Nick. Okay. And Bill Ranchick, who was like on the Apprentice.
Yeah.
And it was one other guy who was like a pilot. So it was the four of us, and we did this thing.
Boring.
One time.
You got to carry all the weight then.
Well, you know, the other guys have the celebrity status
But they're not.
Believe me, as a person who talks for a living, you love being in that situation. You're like, I know I'm going to be all right.
Because you're the one. Yeah. I mean, you're going up against Allen Houston.
You're not going up against him. I mean, I think you're looking at it the wrong way.
Right, well, he's looking at it like a comedian.
You're trying to win something here.
I'm trying to win.
Like, if they offered you that, you would be like, I'm not doing this.
I'll take it in a second. Are you serious?
So I did this. And
I'd be trying to make him look good.
And I did that man panel because the producer was looking for people. And he was a stand-up comic and a producer. And so he was like, I'm looking for somebody funny. And he went to one of his comedy friends, Tracy Esposito. She lives in L.A. now. And she referred me.
There you go.
And like, me and Tracy didn't like hang, but it was like she just thought I was funny and thought I'd be good for it. Which is like, that's the type of thing that comedians would do.
Well, I mean, he has a penis.
Yeah, sometimes we'll be like, hey, you know, this guy's right and, you know, I don't hate him. So, use him. Because, of course, after you realize, well, you're looking for a man, it can't be me. So I'll hook somebody else up. So Tracy hooked me up with that. And then about a year or so after that, another producer was looking to do a man panel. And that producer referred me to her.
To her, yeah.
So the first man panel I did, it was me, Andy Kaplow, Brett Baratella.
Please be Allen Houston.
And Curtis Stone.
Damn it!
John Starks.
Curtis Stone is like a celebrity chef.
John Starks.
So once again.
John Sally for some reason.
Once again, only comedian. Only person who is used to being live and being funny.
Right.
So I kept getting called back. So, I mean, I've been there from the first time they've ever had a man panel till now, and I've only missed two times.
And Chuck Nice.
Yeah. Charlie Ward.
Right. Charlie Ward, well,
Chuck Nice came along.
He's the funny one. But Chuck is on everything now.
Well, you know, it's funny because when Chuck
along with Charlie Ward.
When Chuck first came in, it was one of those types of things where, like, even some of my fellow comedians like, yo, you know they about to get rid of you. Because you know how it is.
Yeah, well,
you, as a black like guy, you're like, you only think that, okay, they want one black guy. They're not going to have two black guys.
Yeah.
But I give it up to them because they were able to see that me and Chuck are two different guys, and we work well together. And over the years, it's kind of been whittled down where it's me, Chuck, Bob Guinea, and we usually have like a fourth wild card person who maybe somebody who's affiliated with NBC, like with a TV show, you know, either on NBC or USA or Bravo. And
that's nice.
Yeah, so it's a nice gig. You know, I mean, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, so most of the people who know who I am are housewives.
Mm-hmm. Show. It's like it's Kathy Lee and Hoda. So every now and then they're just like, let's see what men think. Yeah. They just have to have men on the show.
Oh, you guys,
you boys.
Oh, you.
And I'm happy to be there.
Oh, you. Sing to me again.
Yeah.
But, guys.
Well, last time you were at the draft house in the side room, some woman challenged you to sing, didn't she? Wasn't that?
That was a very drunk lady.
You said I'm a singer, and she just said sing.
Right. Man. It's like it's
doing that
when
right
you
now.
When you have it's like. Some, especially when people get drunk. That's why my goal is to
Hoda's a drunk? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
No, this has nothing to do with Hoda
I mean, you can
and
inform
drunkenness. No, I'm just talking about how when...
Hoda's a drunk on the views of the
my
three
goal
guys on
is to
podcast.
My goal is to play arenas where everyone is facing the stage and there's no waiters and waitresses bringing drinks to drunken them up so they can holler out and say dumb shit. But, yeah, people, you know, you start to talk about stuff, you know, because you talk about stuff from your life. And I'm like, you know, I'm a singer. I've been a singer or I've sung professionally. And as soon as you say that, there's always, hey, sing something. I'm like, you really think I'm starting this line of, you know, discussion to totally say, I used to be a singer, but I don't do that anymore. You know, like, I'm not going to.
I was
like,
a singer.
Just wait.
I'm getting to it.
Until Charlie Ward,
tell me a joke
until
then.
Charlie Ward died and I took my shirt off. See how I put both stories together. Do we have any? So that is our. Let me retrack. So that is our co-host for today. That is their histories. That's Danny Ruyen.
35 minutes into the podcast.
It took us 35 minutes. Yeah, we're going to be kind of serious for the next. We'll do a couple of emails and then we'll be.
We got some listener emails.
Serious mind. This is Danny Ruyen and Rick Younger. I don't know how we would ever do a radio show. We wouldn't, coming up on a heartbreak, we would not make it.
No shot.
So we have an email from Ashanti, not the singer.
But I'm assuming that's a lady.
Yep. Yes. She's one of our loyalist listeners.
Who's that lady?
A very attractive lady.
Attractive lady, lovely lady.
Yes.
Dear Three Guys On, or in predicted order of hosts most likely to make an appearance on the show before Tim, Randolph, Andy, Romaine, Jamel, Mike, Nate, Chris, Philippe, and Fonte. And now Danny and
Fonte. Yeah. Even Fonte.
Just a quickie to say thanks for the awesome shows these past few weeks. You guys are truly adaptable, and thanks to you, I have new comedians and artists to follow. Keep up the good work.
Two more right now. Listen to Danny's radio show. Follow and Rick Younger. You see him.
She asked us if we knew anything about the fire challenge, which we talked about last week.
We talked about it last week. It's ignorant.
There's an update for this week, maybe. Thanks to the ratchetry of Phenom Black from the Where's My 40 Acres podcast. I would never have known about this. Check out the most recent show for the backstory analysis of the kid in the video. That's the fire challenge video.
We watched it.
We watched that. You know that dude's mother got arrested.
She got arrested.
Why did she get arrested?
Because she stood by and watched her 16-year-old light himself on fire.
Son set himself on fire.
Sometimes your kids do stuff where you're like, you know what? Go ahead. I'm just going to let you do that. You know, it's like, yeah. You know, my father.
I'll hold the camera.
My father and my uncles did that with all of us.
She was holding the camera.
One of those times where you just with your fathers.
Yeah.
And like, we lived on a hill. And we all decided we're going to ride our bikes, tricycles, and stuff like that down the hill. And so each of us went down one by one, falling off of our various vehicles, and they let each and every last one of us do it.
Why didn't the other one see the one in front of them fall?
Everyone thought that we saw what the other one did, and I know, because like my brother goes down. He's the oldest. He goes, he hits the first bump, falls over. Then my next cousin, who's a little bit younger than my brother, goes down and he hits another bump and falls over. My third cousin, I don't even know if he made it all the way down the hill. So then there's me, and I'm like, okay, I gotta avoid those bumps. So as I'm trying to go around the bumps, then I just spilled out, you know, trying to avoid.
We're smart kids.
Yeah.
It's like the Blue Angels. You know, one crashes, they all crash.
So I'm saying all that to say, you know, I don't know if you got to arrest. You know, sometimes kids are going to do dumb stuff. You got to let them do it.
Yeah.
I bet he won't set himself on fire.
He was on fire.
He was in the bathtub with the shower running. Like, he was ready. He was, I'm going to set myself on fire, then I'm going to douse it. But when he set himself on fire, first of all, his whole chest was full of whatever flammable liquid. He didn't just put it on his arm. He set himself on fire, and then he freaked out and ran out the tub and was just screaming running around his bathroom.
Did you see it? Are you talking about on the radio show?
No, we haven't.
And you know that
he was
on
fire.
You know that there's people who are going to use this as the reason why Michael B. Jordan can't be the Human Torch.
There you go.
See that black folks don't know how to handle being.
I was laughing my ass off. I was like, this motherfucker. What else she said?
That was the gist of hers. And we got an email from Walter Gibson. Hey guys, I just want to congratulate you on another season of great shows. I've been meaning to write in for a while, so sorry if I ramble on a little because this was supposed to be like three or four different emails. First of all, I'm going to try to do a better job of reviewing you guys on iTunes. Yeah, everybody should.
Thank you.
I also have a review on Stitcher.
Fucking do that.
Everybody should do that. Randolph, I love the point you made on the Black Guy Who Tips podcast about holding your daughter accountable if she became violent. That was a great discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Andy, can you please say you think you're better than me in a tough guy accent? Think you're better than me.
That's your tough guy accent.
I'm phoning it in, but that's more of a New York accent. Just anytime something happens in New York that you sort of say something about New York to a New Yorker, you think you're better than me?
No, yeah. You think I'm better than you.
Also, I know this is old, but I absolutely love that Dr. Phil bit you and Randolph did a couple months back. We'll bring that back at some point.
We will bring that back at some point.
He has something for Tim, but he's not here.
Of course not.
I also want to say how much I admire your dedication to your child. That's Tim. My wife's expecting, and I hope that I can show my child half of the care you give yours, but Tim misses the podcast for his child.
Yeah,
so,
fuck that.
fuck
that dude.
Man. Also, the B team is on point. You guys should really think about letting them do a spinoff show. We would, but they're not dedicated to the
they're
podcast.
They're not dedicated, and I don't have patience to ride herd over people who aren't dedicated.
And then
I heard Fonte talk about it on his show, why he doesn't produce people, because he doesn't want to deal with the artist. Stupid.
Right.
You're like, come on, man, let's do this. Oh, well,
I'm going to get high.
So we'll get high. Fuck you.
And Walter sent another email saying, congrats on making Upworthy. Thanks for that, everybody. And then side note of Noam Chomsky, which we talked about last week, he didn't deny the Holocaust. He defended a French writer who had been arrested in France for denying the Holocaust.
Now, I'm going to check into this.
He never agreed with the writer. He simply defended his right to say
it. Yeah, I'm going to check into this. I actually don't defend. I defend the right for you to say it, but I'm going to loudly say you're a fucking idiot if you say something like that. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah, you can say or you can
for
say,
denying the Holocaust.
That's yeah, yeah.
Okay, because yeah, they don't.
That's one of them.
I think I said this last week. They don't really deny the Holocaust. A lot of times they go, it wasn't as bad. It's like slavery.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was all right. It wasn't nearly as bad.
There were some points that weren't that bad.
I recently saw somebody who decided they wanted to compare the plight of Native Americans with black folks in slavery. I'm like, why are we having this competition?
Yeah, it's competition.
Yeah, it's that my life is worse than yours competition. Yeah,
you know, it's like y'all just had a little, you know, little labor, little rape, little middle passage, little getting thrown over just to the sharks. You know, a little bit of this. You know, whenever you put a little bit of something into that form of a oppression.
Yeah,
it's like, dude, stop trying to compete.
Just a little bit,
just to diminish it.
Is that it? That's all you
email. Then Monique sent us an email.
Love
about episode 391. I love Chris Lambert, by the way, because he seems to have absolutely no life as a youth in the 90s, like me. All I did was watch BET. He brought up *Asylum*, and I remembered. I had to look them up. I didn't remember them. And a couple episodes ago, Jason Weaver's singing career. He and I may be the only ones who own Jason's "Stay With Me" single. So Chris Lambert.
I'm trying to remember the song, Jason Weaver. Jason Weaver was the kid who played Michael Jackson lot.
Yeah.
He played Michael Jackson in the Jackson
TV movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he was in Drumline. And he was supposed, I think he was in Thea. Was he on a television show, Thea? He was one of her kids. He was supposed to be the one for a minute. They were like grooming him to be the one. I don't know what happened, but he fell off.
But you know, a lot of times when the kid actors fall off, it's because they get so full of themselves from being kid actors, so they're hard to handle as adults.
Maybe that's what it is. Do you remember the kid that in Martin's show, they thought he was Martin's son?
Yes.
Remember that kid?
Yes.
That kid's grandmother is my mother's church sister.
So y'all like almost related. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he was around a lot.
Right, right.
And I was like, this kid? This kid? Because he was just a cutesy little kid who could kind of do like a Martin impression. And some way, somehow, they wangled that into it. And then the last I saw him, he was in that dance, that ballroom dance. Basically, Ballroom Dancing Saves Niggas movie.
I remember.
You know what I'm talking about?
Save Niggas.
The one with Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, it's called Ballroom Dancing Saves
Niggas. I think that's the name of it. He was in that movie, and you know what else he was in? You didn't see that one?
I didn't go.
He was in Red Tails too.
Yes, he was.
He was one of the pilots because he's grown or he's an older kid now. He was the kid who kept talking about Black Jesus.
Man, how does Bukim Woodbine feel?
That dude is getting passed by. I don't know how. He should have.
He was in everything.
Seemed like he was having a solid career. Now he's just.
And he couldn't even get Red Tails.
The moral of the story is, as a black performer, don't get too big for your britches and keep planning. Nope. You know,
we can find another one.
If you are a black, if you're a black performer now and you're hot, Chadwick Boseman, listen up. Get your podcast. Start developing your own stuff. Get your production company. Save your money and start creating vehicles for yourself.
For yourself.
Don't start a record label. They don't never work. That.
And don't have a large entourage.
Allen Iverson.
Allen Iverson.
That always happens. Is she got anything else?
Monique says, "Hey, I like Fancy by Iggy Azalea."
Oh, God.
Ugh, it's catchy as shit. Y'all know it.
Shit being very catchy.
Shit.
Yes, the voice affectation is ridiculous, but you'll have that. I just don't want to listen to it.
It's a hamster, Danny.
I just noticed that, actually. What the fuck?
Randolph has a hamster.
Is it, well, the movement. Yeah. I hadn't seen any movement before, and then it moved, and I was alarmed.
Is it a hamster, or is it a...
It's a hamster.
Is it a hamster?
It's a hamster. It's my dog.
Guinea pigs
hamster.
Are bigger, right?
They're the fat ones. Yeah,
they look like little puppies.
So I would be the guinea pig of this group.
Yes. They're like puppy-sized guinea pigs. She wants one. I'm like, you know, goddamn guinea pig.
Oh, she wants to graduate to guinea pig. Well, she's going to want a puppy at some point then, if she's doing
she
that.
She wants a cat now.
Oh, cats are easy.
I done told my wife, no puppies. We're not bringing in anything into this house that's going to get, first of all, it's going to die before us.
Yeah.
And we got to feed it, and it's not going to be able to take care of us when we're old.
I don't want anything that I gotta feed and care for.
Got to go walk.
Cats are way lower maintenance than dogs.
I don't want cat hair all over my shit.
That's part of it. But it's also the other shit. Like, they have health problems. You got to take them to the vet. That shit costs hundreds of dollars sometimes.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. He's like,
and it always comes when you need it the least.
We have discussed this before.
Cats breathing funny, and it's like $800.
About about pets and illness.
And you get these house pets. Like that out in the hood, you got these dogs that live forever. Hanging out at the garage.
To a vet
but
ever.
You get a dog and bring him in the house. He costs you an arm.
Our golden has an itchy thorax. What?
Right. What? His asshole itches. I don't care. Rub his butt on the carpet.
That's the thing. When I had dogs growing up, my father treated them like ghetto dogs, even though we weren't living in the ghetto. He like, that dog ain't, first of all, he ain't staying in this house. It's like, bring your dogs in because it's cold out here. Hey, he got a coat. He got a coat.
Do they make tussin for dogs?
Yes.
All right. Since y'all bug me, we got to bring him in. He's staying in the basement.
It's called human tussin.
Pet him twice. That's enough. He's good now.
Rub his stomach.
Monique also says, you guys are like my bros. You shade the ish out of everything, and I am here for it. I've been thinking T-Boss couldn't sing since Ain't Too Proud to Beg.
I've been trying to tell y'all.
But I love the hell out of that blonde bob.
She can't sing. She can't dance. She's fat as fuck now.
Well,
she's got nothing.
You can't judge her now. Well, you can't judge her on her peak. No one's buying her shit now.
Yeah, mid-90s T-Boss.
Yeah.
She couldn't sing.
She
was attractive.
Abs. And nice abs.
She had no ass, though. Have you noticed that?
I was looking at the abs.
That's another problem.
I mean, I never got close enough to grab the ass. She might have had one of them compact.
Plus, she was standing next to Chili the whole time. That's a problem.
Chili, yes.
But I mean, but they try to ugly him up. They put him in like.
Well,
they put him in those. They try to take the sex appeal out of it.
That was the fashion of the time.
At first.
Yeah, exactly.
And then.
Like no sex appeal in black fashion.
But it wasn't
girls.
Because they uglied them
ridiculous.
Up in particular.
Well, the end result is.
Everybody, SWV dressed the same.
But they didn't do that to En Vogue. En Vogue was wearing cocktail dresses.
Damn!
They were. They were.
They sexy.
But En Vogue was bringing in a little something different. You know, they were like the alternative to all of that.
En Vogue was for older brothers. You remember Just Kicking It? They were for En Vogue was for kind of for older black people.
Yeah.
Just Kicking
College and older.
Remember, who sang Just Kicking It? Kick off your shoes and relax.
I know who you're talking about. Was it Jay?
Escape.
Escape.
Escape was, they were like, I don't like, I never
I mean,
liked
weren't they wearing like cargo pants and shit too?
No, they were wearing like the cargo short, the big cargo short.
They had like one and a half good looking girls in that group though.
Yeah, that was back when Tiny was actually cute. T.I.'s wife, she was cute back then.
I think they may have actually had an official booger bay in that group.
Yes, they did. She was actually the best singer. I know exactly what you're talking. I can see her in my face. Danny's like, woo-hoo.
That's why they were like, let's kind of dress them songs. So that we can equalize the booger band.
Yeah. the heavy one who was the lead.
Well, even like boy bands had the one guy.
Right.
Who was like, he was the bad boy or whatever. Yeah. He was just the ugliest one.
Right. Because they thought about that's it. It's like, look, if we dress these girls up, if we dress these girls up and put them in cocktail dresses, the booger band girl's going to look like SpongeBob.
Yeah.
So we're like, let's put them in baggy clothes so that now they're all
they all match. Was Joy Fatone the bad boy?
I think Chris Kirkpatrick was the bad boy.
Of the NSYNC, he was
I think
the
they
bad.
Had a Wahlberg. Everybody just would get a Wahlberg, brother.
Well, Wahlberg was a bad boy.
He was.
He was Donnie? Supposed to be with on his Harley.
Well, Backstreet Boys had a dude who was all tatted up, right? And he went to rehab at some point.
He was an alcoholic. He had a ponytail.
Yeah.
That's how you can tell he's bad.
Right.
Like was a 90s movie.
They went
villain.
And really, they really went, every group went and went to the place with the downtrodden, alcoholic, drug-infested kids. Like, look, give me that kid and that kid and that. Look, y'all are going to be in a group.
You mean you're Disney? Gonna, that's where they went.
You're going to be in 98 Degrees. You're going to be in Backstreet Boys. You're going to be in that other group that one remembers.
Jodeci had
That's Jason. Why. That's why 98 Degrees didn't get that big. They didn't have a true bad boy. They had an ugly dude, but he wasn't bad.
Nah.
He was a nice, ugly dude.
They had like three Lacheys and like one other guy.
Right.
Was the group.
Yeah.
And the rest.
And they were like.
The professor and Marianne.
Yeah. And the rest. She had anything else for us?
She said, speaking of bad boys, Bobby Brown, been getting kicked off the NE tours. That ain't nothing new. Which
I just saw him on The View on Friday.
Yeah.
I look at the TV and they were all performing and he was there with them. I was like, I thought he was done, but maybe they brought him back for The View.
And about Belly, she said, the dopest cinematography but the worst piece of ish movie ever.
It is.
I hated everything.
I love the first 10 minutes of that movie.
It's a fantastically shot movie.
Hype Williams said, let me do like a two-hour video.
Fantastic, but the movie is terrible.
She said, I hated everything about the Jamaican plug, and I hated Nas's non-acting one facial expression having monotone self, but I love hood movies.
Yeah,
they should have gotten Chadwick Boseman.
They should have. Think about those like going in the club, long shot where they're walking in slow motion.
Slow motion.
Oh, yeah. Damn, Hype Williams can shoot.
I mean, I still walk in slow motion whenever I'm in the club. Exactly. Which is very rarely, but every once in a while, I walk in slow motion. They're like, why the heck I walk like that? You don't worry about why I'm walking like that.
That Jamaican character was a fucking 10, though. How good was he?
Yes.
You didn't like it?
Yeah. No, I did.
It's been
Jamaican,
so long since
I've
seen Belly.
Don, bring that scarred shit in here to me.
Yeah.
I'm out here for fun. I bet he does. I bet he does kill for enjoyment. I bet he does.
She Hype, says, man. What happened? Well, I know what happened to Hype.
She gives a message to Herbie.
But shoot.
Herbie's not here, so we'll skip that. Oh, yeah. Screw LeBron. I don't get no LeBron check in the mail. I'm from Akron, too. LOL. My grandma would be so mad. She loves that foo. F-O-O. Oh,
Jesus. Jesus.
So I don't mind LeBron. I got no problem with him.
I like him too. I like him as an athlete.
I don't care about going to Miami. I don't care about going there.
I don't care about that. I like him as an athlete. I like him as the guy's a fucking.
He's got strong shoulders.
I just think I must just be old, man, because nobody compares to Dr. J to me.
I could see that.
I mean, you know, I think we
how long was Jay's window?
But, you know, I think we tend to forget the shoulders that so many people are, you know. Dr. J came along when basketball was about to die. Yeah. It was played on rebroadcast. You know, like they didn't even.
Well, the whole ABA saved basketball,
and he like revolutionized the game that so many people have taken to another level. It was Dr. J who got
above it. That above the rim game.
Yeah.
But they got to play in the ABA. You can do whatever you wanted.
Yeah,
you could do whatever you wanted.
And take seven steps.
And that bush. I mean, just think of how high he would have been able to fly if he didn't have the wind resistance.
Yeah,
from that bush.
Holding him back. His because he was up there. You know, didn't he win like the first few dunk contests? He won like the first three or four.
They didn't really have the same kind of dunk contest. Yeah, exhibition dunking things. Yeah. But he did like the foul line dunk.
way
back in like the '70s.
The Statue of Liberty. That was like his dunk.
The Statue of Liberty? That's just the foul line dunk. Yeah. Yeah. With the afro.
For those of you who are listening, we both put our arms up like
the statue. And the afro is pushed back by the wind. Yeah, the wind is pushing the afro back, and you bring it down.
His whole head's getting pushed back.
All right, that's it for emails?
That's it for emails,
We need to talk about Missouri. Danny, you going to be uncomfortable now?
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
I'm fine. I was at the beach for a week. What happened?
I don't know if you know this, but Missouri's on fire. Basically,
not the whole state. Just one neighborhood.
One neighborhood in St. Louis.
Near St. Louis.
About 15 minutes outside of St. Louis. For those who don't know, you all know the story, so let's just get into it. So the kid, where we're at right now, they released a video of him yesterday basically stealing cigars.
That's a murderable offense.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing about the releasing of the video, I just found out today that the Department of Justice, DOJ, didn't want that video being released. Told the police, don't release that video. But you can't stop them. You could suggest it to them.
Well, they could always just leak it and say we didn't release it. So they just came out and said, here it is. Here's our video.
Yeah, but they released it anyway. But there's no reason to release the video.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Well, there is a reason. It's to make him look bad.
Yeah.
Because I heard somebody talking on some show, and they were saying how the video is, because someone will say, well, you're trying to smear his reputation. And then somebody else will say, well, it's not to smear his reputation. It's just to show what kind of person he really was. Like, yeah, that's called smearing his reputation. It's kind of.
Well, you know, it's like stealing cigars. I mean, it's like. What was he going to do with them? Was he going to sell them illegally like the guy in New York who got chokeholded? You know what I'm saying? It's right. What, you know, there are things that, stupid things that someone who's 18 about to go to college will do that, I mean, I remember, I've stole M&Ms from a supermarket once.
What
you know?
I don't know
I mean,
is,
I stole a shirt from a store down by College Park once.
Danny almost stole a Dodgers shirt. Stop.
It would have been a crime that I walked out.
But you know,
stop, Danny.
It's a lot of things that kids do that are that's stupid.
Well, you saw the Maryland College Park recruit that lost his scholarship because he took ice cream Twix bars from that Greenbelt 7-Eleven where there are two undercover cops, by the way, hoping to catch somebody stealing candy.
Yeah.
The guys are undercover in the store and lost his scholarship.
I'm more intrigued that they make ice cream Twix bars.
They do.
I gotta get on that shit.
But don't you steal them.
No, I'm gonna take one.
And you see the side paunch? That's an ice cream Twix bar for this week.
Matter of fact, under there is an actual ice cream Twix bar. He holds it there.
He's packing ice cream Twix bars.
So but, I don't I mean, you're just trying to make the kid look bad. What I don't know is the conversation that led up to.
It wasn't just it wasn't just grab cigars and stuff in your pants.
Running out. What led up to that? Did they not want to sell him? Were this was some sort of confrontation between him and the store? And by the way, that doesn't excuse him walking out of there with cigars.
It looks like, if you watch the video, it looks like he has some words with the clerk. Some shit falls on the floor, and he's like, fuck this, and he picks it up and walks out.
Yeah.
Gets blocked, the door shoves the guy. But it wasn't like, all right, no one's looking. Let me stuff this in my pockets. Yeah. So it was like things got heated, and he probably did the classic like 18-year-old shit, like fuck you, and then left. Yeah. But he stole shit, so it wasn't. He didn't go in with the idea of most likely stealing that shit. I don't think. I think he probably got into it with that dude, the store clerk.
But then the captain says, well, the stop that they had.
Right.
Had nothing at all to do with the stealing of
They sort of changed that again, though. Yesterday morning, they said, they said, all right, this kid was wanted for, you know, stealing from the store. Cop rolled up on him, blah, blah, blah. And then later, he was like, just to reiterate, just to clarify, the cop knew nothing of the theft. And then I think they sort of revised that again and said, well, the cop. Because the description had come over the radio, so he had heard that there was a guy, and this he saw the guy had cigars in his hand when he was like, he rolled up on him for jaywalking, but then he heard the description and yelled. So somewhere into the cop may have become informed of this guy being a suspect. So now they're sort of, it's a gray area.
The thing is that the shooting, apparently, like I heard the lawyer on the Tom Joyner's morning show saying that when you see the autopsy, because he's seen it. He was like, it's going to be sickening when you see it. The girl said, one girl who was on her porch, she said she saw, he shot him in the back. As he was running, he shot him. Why you do that, I don't know. Right. He turns around with his hands up, shoots him in the chest and the face. Turns around with his hands up and shoots him again, and he goes down. The autopsy is going to show that. It's going to show the inner and outer and the distancing. Why'd you shoot him from that distance? Why shoot him?
Yeah.
Well, if someone's running away from you, I mean, I've watched cops.
Well, then
you run. They run after them, and then the guy hops the fence, and the cop's like, oh, God, can't wait.
Then you get in a few punches for making me run. Right. You know, but that's how
you
know. But
you don't shoot him, because if you miss, there's people, you could hit some innocent
person.
But
like I told you yesterday, that's only if you care about the neighborhood that you're
in. Well, I'm talking about the training you receive as a cop. I'm talking about, like,
that kind of goes out of the window when you get
I'm not talking about his state of mind. I'm talking about justifiable shooting.
Yeah.
This guy, let's say the cop felt like he was being attacked. He felt like the guy was going for his gun. He felt like his life was in danger. But now the guy's running away in broad daylight at noon on a Sunday. Right. You can't shoot him now. You run after him, you tase him, whatever. Or if he gets away, he gets away. Like, you know, so what?
Yeah, because I'm pretty certain that they could have found out where he lived and showed up later. Yeah.
Right, it's a small town.
Right.
They can find the kid.
No, I was going to ask, full disclosure, I haven't followed this anywhere near as closely as you guys. Yeah. I actually really was on vacation. How much of a chase was there before? That's what,
maybe
one thing I haven't
40
been.
40 feet?
Yeah.
40, 50 feet? 35 it wasn't
feet.
Far.
So they're
from
they're,
the car to the.
The cop didn't run after him. The cop shot.
He's like,
shot.
I got these bullets. I don't need to run for shit.
Exactly.
So this, pow. So this is, I guess, sort of unrelated, but I just finished reading Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink.
Blink.
One of my favorite authors. I just never got around to reading it. And there have been a number of incidents. The most glaring one, you remember this, Rick, was in I think, 98, 99 in the Bronx, where these cops made a bunch of small decisions that compounded and ended up in a tragedy where an innocent man got shot on his front porch.
Amadou Diallo?
That's the one. Diallo shooting, yeah. So a number of these, each one, you sort of explain it away, and it's obviously it's a tragedy. At the end of the day, someone died that shouldn't have died.
Yeah.
But the sort of what's happened to law enforcement countrywide in a lot of places is they don't allow chases. They don't allow cops to go with partners because you feel emboldened. You don't take your time anymore. And what Andy just mentioned, the training that guys receive and sort of the ability to where, you know, if I'm thrust in that situation, I'll panic like you wouldn't believe. But these guys spend hundreds of hours and thousands of hours.
Yeah, that's what's supposed to be.
So what's supposed to happen is your training is supposed to keep you calm and you can do the sort of evaluations that they do on a regular basis that I wouldn't know how to do. That sounds like it goes out the window here for some reason without the previous escalators.
But you know what the thing is? I think when you are in an environment where over time – all of those things that are part of your training just gets whittled down and whittled away.
Right.
And you have this feeling of, I am the police and everything I do is right.
Right.
And you need to listen to what I say. Because, you know, being in an interracial marriage,
I've had opportunities to be pulled over with my wife present. And as a black person, being used to being addressed in the way that a black person gets addressed by a police officer, even in a traffic stop, I'm used to it. But she's because not, she's there, she's like, why is he talking to you like that?
Yeah, my wife, like, too.
Why isn't he?
You know, that's, I said, I didn't really know that that's not, they don't talk to you like that? I guess it's because I'm black, you know? Yeah, but it's like, yeah, it's one of those types of things where they're police have really gotten out of hand.
My wife learned to lose a lot. I had lost a lot of friends, and I'm doing air quotes. Yeah. She lost a lot of friends when we got together. It started to click on her, like, wait a minute, these people are this way.
Yeah.
I never knew that about them, and they have no interest in changing, so I can't associate myself.
Well, you know, one of the biggest issues, see, first of all, I think we've lost sight of what the actual definition of racism is. And racism is an institutional thing. It's like people think I'm only racist if I go up to a black person with anger and call them a nigger.
You need to write this down and let Andy say it. Because if you're black and you say it, people don't believe you. Yeah. But if a white guy says it, they're like, well, there's some credence to that.
Well, my wife and I, we're currently writing a show. And the show's right now, the working title is Inside Information. And it started because I was doing a one-person show about being in an interracial marriage, raising a biracial child in a so-called post-racial America.
You stole my idea, you hack.
I mean, hey, if you're married to a white woman and you want to write something, you better get to it fast before the other guys who are married to white women get to it.
It can only be one.
Yeah. So, but
interracial
so
Highlander.
When I went to do hack. This, when I went to do my show, my wife went on before me and told a story of when she first met my family. And one of the enlightening things that occurred was after the show, she had a couple of friends come up to her and they talked about how they were so open and ready to listen to what I had to say because she went first. It was like a white person is kind of
established thing. That's priming. That's like a psychological phenomenon.
That's just what I was just saying. If the white, if it comes out for another white person, and not all Danny and Andy, not all of you, but if you hear it out of a white person's mouth, they're like, okay, I believe it.
Yeah,
if you're out of a black person's mouth, well, you're just complaining.
I've said this before. There's an excuse phase for a white person to accept. Like white people, I've said this a bunch of times on the podcast, but white people will exhaust all other options before they settle on something being racist.
Yeah.
They'll say, he was mad, or he was having a bad day, or he didn't mean it like that. And it'll be like, finally, after every other layer is peeled away, well, maybe there was some racism going on there. And black people jump to that
immediately.
Very early in the process.
Immediately.
So somebody call Al Sharpton.
Well, because we've been black long enough to know. Yeah.
Right.
Your black spidey sense starts tingling.
There's a major disconnect. It's like,
oh man, you heard me talk about it in my act.
Shit.
There was this one night where I'm going to go visit my wife when we lived a block away from each other. I turned the corner to go to her apartment, and there's a white woman walking by herself in front of me. My black spidey senses went, oh my goodness. And I'm like, dear God, please do not let this white woman turn around and see me. Yeah. And to show that God has a sense of humor, at that very moment, she turns around and she starts doing that run walk thing where she's
fast. Like,
well, you know, it's the only reason it qualifies as walking is because she's abiding by the Olympic rule where one foot stays on the ground at all
times. Have to straighten the leg. Yeah.
But I'm taller than her, so I'm gaining on her, right? And she's living like her worst black zombie apocalypse nightmare. And she just gets so afraid, so she runs into the doorway of an apartment that she obviously does not live in. And I can see her down there, like, just breathing heavily. And it took all within me not to just go up to her and say, hey, lady, I'm going to go see a white woman. It's just not you.
And I love that move, by the way, of going to a place she's now trapped.
Right.
And can't get into. Best strategy.
You know,
she's safer there.
And and when I went to my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, and told her what happened, this was at a point where she was so new to our relationship, so she was always trying to exhaust every possibility
except
for racism.
Angle.
And she's like, Ricky, I mean, you know, what I'm a woman and I'm out at night. I get afraid whether the guy's black or white. And I'm like, but she's running down the street going, please don't kill me, nigga. Please don't kill me.
You don't.
You know?
Yeah, you get afraid of the white guy if he's
you know,
but if
dressed.
If
he's got like tattoos everywhere, but you get afraid of the black guy who's in a suit. Right. Do you see the difference?
And like,
a light ass Rick Younger. Are you really scared of Rick Younger? Are you?
I mean, I had on a black skull cap, and
I was brandishing a gun, but other than that, I wasn't.
It's that sort of. You know, so you're telling me there's a chance. So, like, if, right. if it's like, well, all right, there's a 99.8% chance it was racial prejudice, but I mean, he had a skull cap on. You know, like, there's always something we can latch onto as white people and say, see, it might not have been racism. Yeah. So yeah. Stop talking about it.
Yeah.
And then, whereas black people will jump to that immediately. And so there's no common ground. Like, there's a Venn diagram of just two separate circles of what is racism, what it isn't. And we do need black people to acknowledge racism only when a white guy says, I'm going to punch you in the face for being black, or hang that dude. Like, then we'll be like, all right, that's racism. Right. But everything else, if there's a way out, white people will instinctively go to the way out first,
right,
before being convinced. And then we sort of, not, I'm saying we, like I'm part of it, but.
no, you're our spokesman, Andy.
I am a spokesman. I'm going to turn down all the other mics but mine. But if you look on Facebook is full of threads with white people telling black people how black people should feel about racism.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they're like, no, you should feel, no, it's not that. Just work harder and all that shit. Instead of listening and saying, oh, I didn't know that.
Look,
well, Questlove wrote that piece about the woman in the elevator being scared of him, even though he's Questlove and he's fucking loaded
and
up
he lives
one
in
side
building.
And lives in your building.
He couldn't get on the elevator without
could buy you, basically. He's loaded up one side down the other. He's more talented at what he does in his life than you will ever be in anything you do in two lifetimes, yet in your mind you're so scared. And then a woman writes another article saying, well, it's just he's in the experience.
Right.
He knows
what's
happening.
Here's the thing. It's like people are always telling us how to feel about stuff. But I read someone talking about feminism. Yeah. And like they were saying, here's a little hint. If a woman says that something is, you know, is misogynistic or she has a problem with it, try believing her.
Right.
You know,
because we do that.
Yeah. Why don't we give, you know, and people were way easier ability to see that, even though you're still going to have misogynistic people are like, whatever. But it's like, I've been black a long time.
That's what I explained to my wife.
For a long time. I know.
Yeah.
Every black person knows.
Right.
And when you act like, every time a black person complains about race, most of the time a black person finally complains about race when they're like, because we know how people are going to react.
Yeah, so we don't complain.
There's so many times we like, you know what, this one ain't even worth sharing. This one ain't even worth talking about. But, you know, try listening and believing the person who's in the experience.
It's like the racial version of mansplaining. It's you're wrong.
Did you hear about the reporters? Did you hear about that?
I did.
Getting arrested.
Yeah, that actually lends itself to you because that is what you do.
You go to McDonald's?
You go to McDonald's.
I do go to McDonald's.
That's a given.
And I loiter.
Yeah, that's a given.
I wait for the second meal.
But the thing is that you're kind of in the media.
I know.
It's a different angle.
No, it is.
But you're in the media. But these policemen tell these guys to get up and leave for no reason. They never did give a reason, number one.
They said you're trespassing.
Yeah, trespassing was given. Then they told the Washington Post reporter, you got to go out one way, and then that way was blocked.
How am I trespassing in a public place? Explain that to me.
They were cussing. I think they had purchased food.
Yeah.
Like they were literally cussing. So, they were there to charge their phones.
Charging phones. They've purchased food. They're sitting there.
It's just like a McDonald's commercial.
Yeah.
It's like, we have Wi-Fi and outlets.
Yeah,
and
So you sit down and you use your stuff. And then,
I'm trespassing.
And now they videotape you. Videotaping is legal. You can videotape policemen anytime you want. That's a legal thing. I'm convinced that there's going to be legislation introduced outlawing that. I'm not saying it's going to pass, but it's definitely going to be introduced.
Well, I believe that whoever invented the camera is black people's best friend.
Now, yeah.
No, historically.
Yeah.
Look back in the 60s. Until you saw black folks getting bit by dogs, then a white person in the middle of nowhere who doesn't interact and, like, you know, they need to stop complaining. Oh, come on, man.
That's happening?
They're biting them with dogs. I mean, instead, they're turning fire hoses on.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do something.
Maybe we should do something.
The camera has helped black folks to a great degree.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side, all those pictures you guys take with your gang signs.
Yeah.
Because, you know, every sign done by a black person is a gang sign.
And you throw up a peace sign. Like, it's like, what gang is that?
I'm in a fraternity. I throw up my fraternity sign. Right. That's a gang sign. Yeah.
Well, on one side, the camera helps. On the other side, though, it's people yelling World Star when something happens. Yeah. I don't know if that's helping.
Yeah, that happened back in 1963. Martin Luther King said that. World Star. I have a dream today that one day some of the footage of my speeches will be on World Star Hip Hop.
World Star.
That was Ralph Abernathy going, World Star.
I heard Joe Scarborough said on his show that, you know, I would tell my son that if the police tell you to move, you just move. That to me is, I don't understand that you just move if the police tell you to move. I don't understand the seating. Why do we cede so much authority to police?
Because we're afraid.
I understand.
Why
I've always been
black
that way,
people
by the
do
way.
It. Black people do it out of fucking, I can be killed.
Yeah.
That's it, end of story.
Right.
I can be killed. I don't know why white people cede so much authority to police.
Well, a lot
I
of them
know
don't.
Exactly why, but there's no, you don't have a fear of, I'm pointing at Danny aggressively, but I don't mean to. But you don't
That's
have
fine.
A fear when you leave the house of, this could be it.
Yeah,
like, or if you get pulled
well,
over.
Well, I'm weird. I do. I think a snake's going to jump out or something.
But all of yours is non-police related.
Right, right, exactly. But I'm still terrified of police. Not in the same way you guys
Why?
Are talking about. I don't know. I've yeah. always been that way. I mean, I go back to when I was 17 years old. Cop pulled me over. I let someone else go at a stop sign. And then I went. And he pulled me over for a, quote, California roll. And I remarked, isn't that sushi? He didn't like that. And then he's telling me to get out of the car. And he's like, can I search your car? And I just finished my stupid constitutional law class. I know that he can't search my car
right.
without my permission, but I go, absolutely.
Right.
Because yeah. I'm so fucking intimidated. I'm right. so yeah. scared of the guy.
Yeah.
And I still feel that way when I see him. I'm like, do I have alcohol in me? I'm
but
35
did you
years
have,
old.
Did you have at any moment in that line of fear, was the fear based in I can be shot?
No.
And see, that's
and you could be inconvenienced.
Major difference. Basically. Like, I could be arrested.
Somewhere in between. In between inconvenience.
I could be arrested.
And if
I go to jail, I can be ass raped.
Well, you know, there are things that are a part of the black experience that are unique to the black experience. Like that time.
Getting shot
that,
by police?
That, well, the moment that black parents, like,
have to
when,
have.
Like, when am I going to have to explain to my kid when they get called a nigger? Or when am I going to have to give them the talk about how to behave if they interact with the police.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's
particularly boys.
Yeah, like I said to my wife, I said to her, I'm like, there's a difference between black parenting and white parenting. Because, you know, like I see it as we're raising our child. Like, I'm like, white parents, your biggest fear is that your child is going to end up in therapy or not like you.
Yeah. Right.
Black parents,
we're
our
eating
biggest,
a lot, right, Danny?
Our black,
we're just eating a lot.
I'm taking notes. Yeah.
Black parents, our biggest fear is that our child's going to end up dead or
dead.
In jail.
Dead.
You know, and
dead.
So that's why there's a difference in how we react to things.
Dead.
That's why it's like, you know, that whole idea when you hear black folks get into this whole thing about spanking kids and they're not as against it as white folks, it's like, because I need to know that he's going to listen to authority and not.
I'm
you
against.
Know,
I'm actually against it now. Since I have mine, I never really have been, but I've come to realize that you can destroy a child with words.
You can well, you know, and
destroy a child. You'll
like
figure
a
this out.
It's like as we're progressing, though, it's like you have that battle because you're like, I don't want to be.
I don't want to beat the shit out of you.
It's like you want to beat the shit out of your kid,
right.
But you're like, I know if I keep beating the shit out of this kid, the negative effects that will have.
Yeah,
right.
And you're like, also, you know that if somebody catches you beating the shit out of your kid, you're gonna get in trouble. But you're also very aware that if you don't instill certain things, it could be to their detriment, and it's more important to you that they survive. You know, it's like you and I are at an age where we kind of feel like, okay, we've made it over some very important humps.
Yeah.
That we may be able to make it all the way through the end.
Yeah. But I still think when I leave the house, this could be the day.
That never goes away.
It's always
never
in
goes
your
away.
Head. This could be
well,
the
and
day.
The reason, one of the reasons that white people don't relate to that, it's this myopic thing. It's like, you know, when I was 19 and I had a purple mohawk, I got followed around the stores. Or, you know, clearly you can just change your haircut and avoid that. Or I've been pulled over twice for no reason in my life. Like, literally, I have twice in my life been pulled over. So it's like, oh, that happened to me once. It's not a big deal. And, we don't sort of see it as a constant. It's just kind of, oh, that happened.
I've been made to lay on the ground.
I've never had that.
I've been made to.
I've never been pulled out of the car.
Cop made me, gave me an option one time. A park ranger one time at Brackenridge Park, San Antonio, Texas, gave me the option of taking a ticket or leave the park. I wasn't doing anything, literally anything. I guess they just felt like there's too many of you here.
Did he just roll up on a whole group of people?
Well, one cat was on, two of my friends were on motorcycles. I was in my car. I was like, we were like four deep in my car. They're on motorcycles. We're in a, it's like a line of cars going through the park. It's like Will Smith and talking about summertime. You go to the park. Sunday, wipe the car down. Put on your best summer clothes.
Put on your short set.
The Hyundai. You put your short set
You hustle
set
to the mall to get that short set before they close. You had to get out.
On. You drive to Brackenridge. I go pick up Troy. Maybe one other person. We go to Brackenridge. And two of my friends are on motorcycles in front of us. And we're behind them. We're in a long line of cars. We get pulled out of the line for no reason. Says, no reason I could tell. We were doing 10. Maybe. Because a line of cars going to the park. We were leaning on the horn.
You were?
Because there was some hoes walking by.
Well, look at what hoes
everybody's
will do.
Leaning, but you got to understand.
But officer, there were hoes.
Everybody's leaning on the
what
horn.
What would you have done?
Well, sir, get back into your car. I didn't know there were hoes
involved. Everybody's leaning on the horn.
Why do you think my siren was on?
Because that's what everybody for does. It's a park. We're being loud. I got my music up loud. Because my Hyundai... My $5,000 Hyundai had $9,000 worth of stereo equipment in it. So my stereo's loud. We're having a good time. We get pulled out of the line. We get pulled over.
$5,000 Hyundai with $9,000.
At least
and 90. You chastise Andre Rison.
Yeah. Well, I grew past that. Andre Rison was 40, still sitting there with sunglasses on in an interview.
Maybe he'll get in the next 5 years. But continue.
Past that. I was in my early 20s. We're sitting there, and the cop says, I'm going to give you guys a choice. You can either take a ticket or you can leave the park for the day.
What's the ticket for? Did you ask
I said, officer, we're not doing anything. Disorderly.
Okay.
Just random, just disorderly. It was only a $45 ticket.
Did you leave and come back in a disguise?
No, I took the ticket. And I always feel like somebody asked me one time, why'd you take the ticket? And I feel like, remember in Good Will Hunting when he said, his father would
because
give
because fuck him, right?
Because
took
fuck
the wrench.
Him. Yeah, I'll take the wrench because fuck you. You're not making me leave the park.
So wait, he gives you a ticket and now you can stay?
Yeah.
So he says
it's a tax.
Go ahead and stay here and be disorderly.
Exactly.
Just pay your fucking
tax.
That's
how you know it's bullshit.
Right.
It's a tax.
Because if it was really that disorderly, he would just not give it a choice.
Because fuck him.
Right.
That's why. Yeah, if it was disorderly, you have to leave.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to leave. Or you get arrested. There's no, I'm going to give you the ticket, you can stay or you can leave, because he thought, Leah, I was like, give me the ticket. I have a job. Matter of fact, I had two jobs and I lived at home. Give me the ticket.
I can't afford $45. You see the subs in the back of my head?
$9,000 of stereo equipment. $9,000.
Because fuck
I
him,
sell I one tweeter and I'll be out of this debt.
That's the kind of thing you have to go through. Now, would he have done that to white kids wilding out? Maybe.
He might have. I mean, frat parties get broken up.
I was in the middle. I was in the middle of something, and
there were hoes.
Yeah, and there was hoes there, and I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving these hoes.
Man, you think I'm gonna leave these hoes? And all it cost me is $45. I'm gonna spend more on hoes on a regular.
Spend $45 on these hoes anyway.
Did you use that later as
say,
to
I
guilt
spent
the hoes?
$45
on
just
you hoes. Mad. I was just mad for a long time, just for the injustice of it. Of
right.
Why am I? I wasn't doing anything wrong. And I say that to say I don't like when police – people see such – why? I'm not doing anything wrong. So if I'm not doing anything wrong, why must I tell the police officer, okay, sir, and go along because he's a police officer? Because he has a hard job. That's what they always say. Well, they have a hard job. It's a job he chose.
Look.
I didn't tell him to do that job.
Yeah. My brother is a retired state trooper and now works for the Baltimore City Police Department, teaching like combat to officers. And he has told me on several times how to behave around cops, and particularly white cops. He's like, I am a retired officer, but I have been treated like crap. You know, like I've been treated like a black person when they don't know that I'm a cop.
Till they see it, the X,
you know?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. You know, it's like,
oh, hey, man, you're one of us.
Right. Could you imagine what would happen if he didn't have proof that he was a cop?
Yeah.
You know,
get that stick put on his head.
You know, he called me up because of a Facebook post that I did about the NYPD. Like, yo, be careful. You know, like,
You know they read that, right?
You know, they might just show up at your house.
Well, I mean, and then the neighborhood is on fire. That's frustration. You always hear that. They burned their own neighborhoods.
Well, maybe they didn't feel like it was their neighborhood.
They don't.
You know?
Feel like you're in a prison.
Well, and it was only like 9 people involved
with this whole thing. Very quiet, Danny. Very quiet.
Well, I don't know enough about it. I don't want to speak out of
well,
turn.
Well, the neighborhood's what are the neighborhood.
Right, so I know there was a lot of looting. And
it wasn't a lot of looting. It was like 9 people who got
fair enough. Well, you figure if the cops have MRAPs and grenade launchers, they could have stopped the looting. You know what I mean? Like, they kind of let it go.
Yeah.
And then, they could have just made a perimeter around Quick Stop, and no one would have burned the shit down. Like, where were they that night? All the other nights, no one was even trying to loot.
Yeah.
But the night of the looting, they're like, you guys stay home. Don't worry about this one.
Well, what made me very mad was Rachel Maddow was reporting. Like, one night they're having a rally. An impromptu rally has broken out. And there's some little girls dancing to gospel music. And there's a skirmish line of police officers in camo fatigues.
Got to blend in.
in front of an armored personnel carrier. There's a cop on top of it with a BAR rifle. That's the big rifle.
The great big one, yeah.
Yeah. With a BAR rifle looking through a scope at these little girls dancing.
maybe I wanted to see these moves a little
makes
better.
Me so, so mad. So I'd written that down on Facebook, because that's what you do now when you're mad. You write on Facebook.
He's,
you gotta bend.
You feel like you're an activist.
Yeah. You feel like you're an activist. So you write it on Facebook, and then somebody wrote, why don't you just turn it off? I was like, wish I could just
you
turn
know
it
what?
Off.
Yeah, because I saw the first comment you had, and I just had to walk away.
You walked away
because I was like, I'm not even going to participate in this. But it's like,
I wish I could. How great would that be?
That was
be
my,
if
that
I
was
just
my half sister.
Yeah, I was like, how great would that be if I just didn't care? That'd be so great. Do you know how far I could be in my comedy career if I just didn't care about my daughter? How great would that be?
Right. I don't care about your daughter, and I'm not very far. I really don't care at all about your daughter, and look where I am sitting here.
How fantastic would that be? I could just not be here.
But that goes into that whole respectability politics thing, where it's like, if you're the right kind of black person, you behave a certain way, which feeds into the whole thing when black folks are like, why are you burning up your own neighborhood? It's like, stop buying into all the things that historically people have said that if you do this and if you behave that way and if we don't talk about it, it's like we've not been talking about it since the beginning and it has no effect.
And a neighborhood's on fire.
You know, it's like
a neighborhood's on fire.
You know, I don't know if anybody read the article in The Atlantic, The Case for Reparations by Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like
I didn't read the article.
It's a very long article.
No. The reason why I didn't read it was because if I was to read it, he'd be preaching to the choir.
Right.
I was like, there's no reason for me to read it.
Well, read it because I was on jury duty one day.
There you go.
But, the thing is that there are things where even if you understand the history of black folks and the things that have happened to us, there are some things he goes into.
The losing of the money, the loans.
The redlining and stuff like that. Redlining is, that has to do with housing. But it's like, it's all of these head starts that everyone but black people have been given. So even when things are given, like you have the GI Bill and it's like, but mysteriously the black GIs don't get the stuff or when it comes to housing, loans are supposed to be given out, but we get subprime loans and all these things where it's like, by the time these things get rectified or acknowledged, you're so far behind in the game till there's no way to catch up.
Yeah.
You know,
behind,
like after,
you stay behind.
After slavery, you have Reconstruction, and then about 12 years into it, when it looks like the gap is closing too much, all of a sudden everything cuts off.
Yeah.
And it's like, so people have this whole idea like, why can't you do this? And why haven't you done this? Or why haven't you guys accumulated wealth?
Because we're lazy.
The system has been designed so that.
Because we're lazy. And it's tough to, you can't, and again, it would be better if Danny or Andy were saying it.
Right.
Because if we say it, we're complaining.
But if
you're a white person, you say it, and then they're like, they may not believe you also, because it'd be like, well, you got too many black friends.
and then it's like, you know.
You play basketball. Do you play basketball?
But as a black person, this is not stuff I've learned in school.
No.
So it's like, how would a white person know
You know, how would a white, person have the desire? Like, let me learn more about the history of black
folks.
What did
they teach all about slavery?
Well, I mean,
it was bad.
Well, it was bad, but like, well, they, I remember.
At least we don't do that anymore.
Our founding fathers, in particular, the ones that we look up to,
the ones we celebrate,
like Jefferson and Washington. Yeah, the ones that have holidays. It was always like, yes, yeah, all right, they owned slaves. Just, but they were nice. They were nice to their slaves. Yeah. Like that was part of the lesson plan. That was the curriculum. Yeah. They were nice. I mean, their slaves would be able to go into town without supervision.
Thomas Jefferson actually loved one of his slaves. One of his.
What I like to say to that is, so George Washington had 600 slaves, 600 father of the country. How many slaves do you think he raped?
Well, you figure only about 300 were female.
How many did he love?
Yeah. How many do you think he raped? Just off the top of your head.
None of the men.
What would be a... Are we sure?
He wasn't gay. Don't call him gay.
That's why I wish they had camera phones back then, because I would love to see footage of George Washington.
World star.
Going down drunk to the slave shack. Like, Washington in the house, where the bitches at?
If you think you got just pussy on demand...
Let me ask you this. This is semi-related. The thing that I get pissed off all the time about on doing the radio show is something happens, regardless of what it is, that causes the sprint to the keyboard like you're talking about with Facebook, whatever else. And everybody's a critic. Everybody's an activist for 30 seconds. And you fire off a post and you feel like you've done something. And then this hive, this swarm goes from thing to thing trying to prove that they're the most offended. It may or may not apply to this case.
Yeah. It's happening.
Well,
it's definitely happening.
But so here's my point, is that you see, like, whether it's Anthony Cumia or whether it's a million other things that happen, it's the, I'm going to show that I'm the most offended, and then what results from my anger and my fervor be damned, and we'll move on to the next thing to be offended about.
Yes.
Right.
So when I look at the Huffington Post, or I look at, you know, I don't know, you pick any of the million things that take whatever sliver from, especially this case, again, I don't know enough about it to come up one way or the other. But I feel like we're in a phase where we should be getting way more information than we are before some of the judgment happens. You see what I'm saying? Like,
oh, sure.
Think about from our thing as a comic. Like, this person talked about rape in their act, and it sounds awful when you say it in a clinical way.
Yeah.
But I have seen some funny as fuck rape jokes. Andy Klein has one, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
I've seen some jokes about a million things that you would go, normal conversation, if at a party, it's probably not okay, but stage, you guys, you know, we can do what we do. So my question is, how detrimental is that to this process?
It's extremely detrimental. It's access to the ability, I'm saying that longly, but access to the ability to just run off at the mouth is a problem. Everybody has the ability now to just run off at the mouth loudly. And not just your circle of friends. We're doing it right now.
Yeah.
Everybody has the ability now to run off at the mouth, and not everybody should.
Well, you know, access. I think that in general, people don't have enough true knowledge of all that has happened in the history of America. Yeah. We have this, our American history that we learn in school is American propaganda.
Oh,
it's like, we're the best. We're number one. Yeah. You know, like, I remember we were talking about the show Newsroom. And the first episode.
That's the whole,
like,
episode.
There was
an
episode where the lead character is at a panel discussion. He's like, and the person in the audience says, can you tell us why you believe America is number one? And he goes into explaining that we really aren't number one. What are we number one at? But we have this whole idea that if we did it, it was the right thing to do. So,
think you're better than me.
Like, exactly. It's like, we go into other countries to, you know, to bring democracy. It's like, we're bringing democracy. It doesn't matter if they wanted it or not. It's like, everything we do is right.
Maybe democracy doesn't work.
You know,
in this particular instance.
Yeah,
you know, maybe it doesn't work.
And it doesn't work in religious states where that's always going to supersede the rule of law.
So why would that
work? Then you also have...
You mean like America, Danny? A religious state? You mean like America?
But a part of the socialization that we've had as a country historically has been about race. You know, in order to make slavery work, you had to have white supremacy. In order to have white supremacy work, you got to have ways of separating black folks amongst each other. You have to have ways of separating poor whites from blacks. Like, oh, these blacks are going to take your stuff, poor whites.
Right.
You better watch out. So now you have white folks we have a natural inclination to stand up and defend black folks and blackness, and white folks have a natural inclination to stand up and defend whiteness. Yeah. My wife, who loves a black man, is married to him, has procreated with him. She has said, Ricky, sometimes when we talk about race, I get defensive. She's like, I know I shouldn't. I know I'm wrong. I know that the things that we're talking about, you have these are valid points. But I have been socialized as a white person to want to defend myself and to look nice.
The answer is, but no.
It's like discussing feminism. Men be like, no, no.
Not me.
Yeah.
Not all guys.
It's everyone has that instinct. And that's where, you know, those terms like mansplaining come in.
Yeah.
It's like you're just telling a woman how she's supposed to feel about women's issues.
You
got to
look to yourself. By the way, on Thursday's podcast, we'll be talking about women's bodies. So I'm just letting you guys
know. We got to wrap up this one soon.
They sound hot. Wrong tone?
Not hoes, women.
Not hoes.
How long have we been up?
Hour and a half.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I'll say this as far as the end of this Missouri discussion, that the militarization of police needs to stop.
Yes.
The ceding of control to police needs to stop. Police don't need an armored Humvee carrier. Police, they don't live in the community, so.
It's a town of 20,000. It's a small town.
Yeah, but they
not
don't.
Not a big spot.
Yeah, they don't live in the community. They're not. It's different. Police around a black community aren't there to serve and protect the community. They're there to contain the community. Yes. You see the difference? We're there to contain. They're basically prison guards. I think that's how they see themselves. Like, we're prison guards, and there's no wall or boundary, but there are boundaries.
Right.
That we set down, and you stay inside those boundaries. And if you break outside those boundaries, we're going to hit you with something. We're going to hit you really hard with something, so you should probably stay inside those boundaries. That needs to stop. But you can't say that out loud, because there's a whole section of this country who's like, police are right.
Well, go ahead, Ray.
Well, you also have the idea that people see stuff on the internet, and it's right. Like, people see stuff on the internet and run with it. Everything that I've ever seen on the internet that has been untrue or a hoax or a satire, failed satire, if you go to Google and put that very same thing in, you will find out if it is true or not. Like one example is, there's this one where people attach a picture of Bill Cosby to this statement. I'm 83 years old and I'm tired. First of all, if you're a Bill Cosby fan, you know Bill Cosby isn't 83 years old. Right. That was the first thing that put up my antenna. And I went and I looked, and they're like, oh, this is something that a white conservative said, and people have attached Bill Cosby's picture to it, and people have run with it. But it's like the whole idea that stuff gets seen,
and once
on the
it gets
internet.
Exposed, you see it come back up like 6 weeks later. Someone else on your Facebook feed falls for it again.
Yeah, it's so dangerous. Like the vaccination people, like 9/11 truthers, are constantly doing that. Yeah.
Facebook Messenger app is like the worst thing ever. It's like Facebook is going to figure out a way to take over the world through our phones.
Right.
I'm like, you are not afraid to have Facebook. You're not afraid to be on any other form of social media. But now all of a sudden, this Facebook Messenger app. They reveal to you what's in it that probably every other social media
every other app has.
Except you know that it's on Facebook. I'm not doing that. You have to call me. I've seen that so many times.
Now I'm going
to
put this picture on Instagram.
Rule of thumb.
Put the location where I'm at.
Here's the rule of thumb. Don't do anything on your phone. I'm not talking about just Facebook. I'm talking about texting,
anything,
all that stuff.
Don't call anyone.
You don't want to be seen. I'm telling you, when I reach my pinnacle of fame, all my dick pictures are coming out. But I stand behind that. I even have a couple with my face in it. And I got some without my face in it. And I can't deny, because my dick is a distinctive dick. It's like, I call it the chocolate banana. It curves to the left.
It's distinctive.
You know, but it's like,
it's
just
known.
Don't do anything on the internet that you don't want
found
out.
Can't tell people that, because it's going to get found.
I was going to say something to your point a second ago, though. I usually give more leeway to law enforcement, just in general, people that, as you mentioned before, like, they are more at risk than I am in my daily life. They have to encounter strange situations, or approach things, and they don't know. And there's a level of caution and, again, sort of that leeway that I give. So if I'm pulled over for a traffic stop, I put both my hands on top of the steering wheel just to ease what potentially could be something else. I don't think there's anything wrong with that inherently. Obviously, what you're talking about with a military police state
I'm talking about a police officer telling you to get up and walk out of McDonald's.
Sure.
We're not doing anything wrong.
And again, that's overboard, too. But
you can't tell me to do that.
No. Of course, you're right. But I guess in general, my point is I tend to, you know, it's the same way when people criticize someone from the military or criticize someone from law enforcement. They are, and it's their chosen vocation, but I give them more sort of free rein, a wider lane to operate in than a normal citizen, I would say.
The only reason I don't, well, I come out of a military family, and also my father was in law enforcement. So, like when people talk about how.
So you hate your father?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
That's what this whole podcast is about.
It all comes back to
reveal.
This. Daddy, Daddy. Like, when they talk about how great people in the military are on, like, okay, some of them.
Yeah, a lot of guys are.
Some of them ain't. I know that.
You get your own cross-section of douchebags and racists, whatever else.
Right. I grew up on a military base. I know. Yeah. Some of them are, some of them aren't. That's just how it is.
What's that psychological study that they did, and they found that there's like one or two differences between a cop and a criminal?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, some of those guys are just decided to stick with cop, even though they really are a criminal.
Yeah,
you know?
You know, and then so when I look at a cop or like a fireman, when a lot of firemen I know who are like, they're like, I'm not a hero. I like fire. You know, they'll tell you. Right. I like fighting fire.
I like pretending the hose is my dick.
They like the adrenaline.
Chocolate banana
hose. I'm trying to get into the calendar this year.
I like to come all over a fire. That's how you put it out, right?
I don't believe in disrespecting police officers, but I don't believe in disrespecting anybody. Just out of nowhere for no reason, just because you. But I don't.
Unless it's me when I first start doing comedy.
Well,
dick.
Of course.
You had to learn.
Of course,
you had that coming.
But I don't believe in ceding authority. Cops are there to serve us. We're not there to serve police.
It's to protect and serve, not to protect and serve up ass whoopings.
But I'm not one to talk shit to police officers or just out of nowhere. But
I'm so damn
like
scared, dude. I don't talk no shit.
I don't take shit. And Courtney and I had a dealing with some police one night. It was fine. You know, it wasn't anything we started. We had to give statements.
I was there,
They were fine with us. Yeah. And they were fucking stormtroopers. These cops were. Fairfax County Police, these motherfuckers were some stormtroopers.
Hey, guys, nice night out.
They were sitting there chit-chatting. We were just chit-chatting with us, and we saw a guy start a fight with another guy and pull a knife out. And then in P. Brennan's.
Oh,
and
wow.
Fold the knife up like nothing. And Courtney full on saw it. And Courtney was like, oh, that guy's got a knife. I said, you got to call the cops, man. Courtney said, I don't want to call the cops. I said, we got to call the cops. The guy's running around here with a knife. Right. I'm not comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable.
He ain't stabbed nobody yet.
Cops came, took us outside. He was like, did anybody see the knife? I said, I didn't see the knife, but he did. And Courtney was like, God damn it.
You son. Yeah.
I saw the knife. And then the cop asked him, quite a pulling knife. Is this the knife? He's like, yep, that's it. And they arrested the dude right there on the spot. And we
did the guy do the I'll see you at 3. It's like, as soon as I get my knife back.
I was smiling at him the whole time. Like,
you go to jail with that knife.
I have an Instagram and a Facebook. You can find most of my information there.
I'll tag you.
I give you your respect as another human being. Let me say it to you like that. You know.
Yeah.
Especially when I get pulled over, I'm like, I fucking did it. Probably. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you pull me over, I'm speeding. Fine. But you don't have to have the thought of, if I make one false move that I don't even know what this false move is, and it's a fluid changing false move, he might shoot me.
Well, yeah, it's like.
You don't have to have that thought as a white guy until you have that thought. And I pray to God you never have to think like that, because it's a shitty feeling to have. Like, all right, here we go. This could be the one. The cop could be in a bad mood from somebody he dealt with before, and now he's going to take it out on me.
He was in a bad mood. He's not a racist.
And he can get away with it. That's the
all of his bad moods are against black people.
Yeah, that's the part that's the worst, is that he can get away with it.
Yeah,
and I mean, he sees me a certain way.
Well, that's the thing. It's like. So many cops have gotten so arrogant that even though people are taking videos constantly, I'm like, have you guys not seen that every day there's a different video? When are you guys going to at least get to the... But that's kind of what you need. You need an arrogance.
I don't think that's a fair generalization to say that cops have gotten so arrogant, is it?
I think it's like the military. Remember the military after 9/11? A lot of people joined the military because they wanted to get back.
Yeah.
I think police are having the same thing. I think people, you see that.
That's a pretty broad.
I don't say all of them, but how many does it take? This is why I say, and I've said this a couple of times, and I'll say it again. I don't believe there are any good cops. What do I mean by that? There are cops that are really nice guys, right? There are. But when push comes to shove and a cop does something wrong, how many other cops rat that cop out? Not even rat that cop out. Just say, I don't want that guy to be a police officer anymore. Yes, he did it. When's the last time you cop say something like that about another? They're like a gang, dude. They don't
necessarily say it to you. They don't say it publicly.
I've never heard it.
But internally, there might be.
I've never heard that.
The point is that if it's said internally, if it doesn't go any further than a guy pulling up another cop, you shouldn't have done that. And, you know, no action is taken.
When's the last time you saw a cop? First is the cop that The woman on the highway, the California Highway Patrolman, who was punching her in the face.
Yeah.
He fought her like she was a dude. And like he
or like she was actually fighting back. Like she just found out getting life. Punched.
Have you seen that video?
I haven't, no.
This cop is on top of this homeless 50-year-old black woman. He's got her pinned down, and he's just drilling her in the face. Just bang, bang, bang. Big, big California Highway Patrolman. I'm like, that story is just gone. I didn't hear any other cops say, that guy's out of his fucking mind. What I heard was, she must have done something.
Well, see, that's a common police
you
belief.
Hear that?
Because, you know.
Watch the video. Watch the video. All right. She must have done something. You hear that a lot. Yeah. I'm like, what could she possibly have done?
Well, but what cop is going to just run to the press? I mean, they have spokespeople. They have
it's not even so much about running to the press. You never hear anything. You just
who are you going to hear from? Someone going to call you personally from California?
Serpico's the last cop I heard from. She's just a homeless lady. Look.
I mean, obviously, it's graphic and awful.
Look at that.
A common cop belief
she should
is
tap
that
out.
A common cop belief is that if I am interacting with you, you must have done something.
Yeah, true.
Did he come to pull the cop off of her?
No. To subdue the suspect.
To subdue the suspect. I don't even think that guy's a cop. I think he's just a just somebody who's
just a guy.
He's just saying stop moving, so he stop hitting you. Maybe.
So let me try to phrase it this way. I do a sports show, right? And there are so many athletes, you know, who probably stay on past their prime and probably should have retired but don't. Yeah. Or, you know, who want to play hurt. And it's easy for a fan to call up and say, he's not right. He should take himself out of the game. To get to be a pro athlete, to get to be that point, you've got to believe that your ass doesn't stink, that you're invincible. So if you start going, well, I don't feel that good today, they are already in the process of replacing you the instant you become that starter, right? That's your career. So maybe to get to the point where you can be an effective law enforcement personality, maybe you have to demonstrate some authority. So what we confuse as arrogance, is it necessarily fair for us that they don't have to face their rigors on a daily basis?
Well, that depends now. So you build this air of arrogance, right? But then you start
authority.
But you start to believe that. And then that air of authority.
Again, I'm not defending what happened in that video or any of the other things.
You just can't.
Right.
But then it morphs into something else, and now you're this guy. That guy's not the only person who's ever done that. And by that guy, I'm talking about the guy who was beating on the
woman. Well, it's a personality type.
He's not the only one who's ever done that.
I mean, I could never be a cop because I'm very much a live and let live kind of person. I don't like exerting authority over people. Like if I see someone walking down the middle of the street, I'm not going to say, hey, get away. Or if there's a sign that says, don't walk in this area and someone, I'm not going to care. I don't care if someone wants to use drugs. But there's a certain personality type that wants to exert authority over people. Like I got to make sure they do things the correct way. And I'm going to put myself in that situation to do that. So people who have certain personalities aren't going to be cops because that's not a job that they go for. Some people obviously are good cops, but then you have the extreme side of that personality, which is I have to exert something over people.
And it's a bullying thing. I have the control now. Yeah. But I think it goes to our point earlier, like you were saying about the military, Randolph. There's going to be a cross-section of everybody and every all walks of life. They're asshole firefighters.
Here's what the military does. They kick you out. They're like, you can't be in the military anymore. They eject people all the time.
And you know what? Those guys become cops.
It's the same possibility because they kick people out.
I got to wear a uniform.
I've seen that. They kick people out. I got a cousin that got kicked out.
And you know, another thing I found with cops just from like also being related to a cop and having cop friends from by way of that, is that you have some people like, look, I'm in here. I'm X number of years away from getting a pension. I just want to survive.
Yeah.
You know, so that creates all kinds of stuff. It's like you're no longer in it because you got this grand plan of saving the world. You're like just trying to save your ass, which in that type of situation like that, who knows, you know, maybe something she did made him feel like his ass was in jeopardy.
He had to start punching her, yeah.
So he starts punching her. But it's like he's punching her for everything other than whatever.
Yeah. Because maybe he saw his partner die, and now he's like, oh, no one's going to shoot me. I'm going to make sure.
Get killed by an old black lady.
I neutralize this situation.
Like I train a kid who's he's a cop. He's park ranger. Now in D.C., what that means is you
park
cover
police.
All the
all the parks
stuff,
and there's a bunch.
Yeah, which is it's a lot different than here. He's ready to quit. He's like, I don't know if I could. He's young. He's like 25. He's like, I can't do this. I can't be part of this thing anymore. It's dangerous. Right. The police don't. He's like, they don't respect the public. The public don't respect us. Right. It's crazy. That's why he came to me to learn self-defense. He was like, the self-defense teachers just don't work.
But, you know, it's like, you know, there are a lot of people in all walks of life who have decided they've gotten a job and they're like, how long do I need to do this before I can retire? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And some of those people get into the police force.
Step and stem.
You know, and so they'll be like, in a way like this guy, where it's like, I don't think I can do this. But some of them stick with it, even though they come across this feeling at 25.
Do you begrudge that, though?
I don't know if I begrudge it. I think
as a police officer, it's dangerous because of the job you do.
Yeah. It's one of those types of things where it's
you
like.
You know what I mean?
I do.
It's the job you do. You can't have that mentality.
It kind of is what it is because there's all kinds of people. Like, I'm always surprised when people talk about they're like, oh, man, you did it. You decided that you were going to do this for a living and you're doing it. You know, like, when I go home and I visit the church I grew up in, to them, I'm like. Like my pastor always says, he's like, I don't know nobody else on TV except for Ricky. So to, you know, like, but they admire it in such a way, almost like, man, I do something I hate. And they feel like there's nothing else to do, or they don't feel like they have another talent to do the thing that they love, or they don't think the thing that they love can bring them money for whatever reason. And so it's prevalent in a lot of careers.
Teachers.
It's just that it's dangerous. Yeah.
You start off
certain careers
and you just get stuck. I think teachers is probably the big one. You go in as a wide-eyed, I'm going to make a difference. Then you get assigned to some shitty school, and then you're a couple of years in, and now you're stuck. Let's say you're 10 years in. And you're like, all you got to do is make this next 10. I don't give a fuck about these kids. You just stop caring. I don't give a fuck. Now imagine that you have that same mentality, but you have a gun and a stick and a taser. You know, I don't give a fuck about these. Fuck your rights, your family. Wow.
All right, we got to wrap up this podcast. Was that a baby crying?
Yeah, but not mine.
Not in your apartment? It's a loud ass baby.
Mine is gone.
That's how every podcast ends.
Yeah. We're going to end with
the baby's crying. We got
telling
to go.
A story and a baby telling a story. Listen, people, come back on Thursday. We'll be here for you guys.
Yeah, we'll do a lighter podcast.
Very light. We have a lot more funny stuff for you on Thursday.
Probably
we hope
shorter.
These guys will be heavy. I want to thank Danny and Rick for hanging in. You guys hanging in for the next one?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Danny and Rick will be here on Thursday.
You know, if. None of this would have happened if the St. Louis Rams didn't draft a gay guy.
That's right.
I think that's the one takeaway.
It's the retribution
they
factor.
Right.
Yeah.
Since Danny's here, we're going to talk a little bit about the who's the auto racer?
Tony Stewart.
Tony Stewart. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that. And Michael Sam. Talk a little bit about that, too. Give your Twitter stuff.
At Funny Danny.
And give yours?
At Rick Younger.
Oh, God, Lord, I could have did this.
You know, Google me, Rick Younger. I'm the first 5 pages of Rick Younger. Go to rickyounger.net, rickyounger.com.
See,
just
that's
Rick
what I was
Younger
expecting.
Everything.
Why didn't you do that?
Because I use one-stop shop. You Google me, there's a bad review of me, like third. I don't want people to find that shit.
You guys know where we are, so come on back on Thursday. We'll be here for you guys. And Danny gets the song choice Thursday coming up, so we will see what he chooses. All right, so listen, I'm Randolph Terrence.
I'm Andy Klein.
And sitting in with us that we've had
Danny Ruye.
And also,
Rick Younger.
And we are 4 guys on. We are out.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised.